Tinker Toys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank engines and tracks, puzzles, board games, and children's books, all very reasonably priced, you can't go wrong with a gift from Tinker Toys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos, or the just-renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. Tinker Toys is open daily.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, this is Barry Bagnato with the National Naval Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland. Back on American soil again, CBS News correspondent Kimberly Dozier arriving at Andrews Air Force Base with military casualties from the Iraq War on a C-17 from Germany. Here at this premier military medical center, she begins the next long phase of recovery from the serious head and lower body injuries she suffered in a May 29th attack. She has made progress, her doctors say, but Kimberly will require rods in her legs before she can even try to walk again. Her parents and boyfriend plan to be at her bedside here through the night. This hospital across from the prestigious National Institutes of Health has admitted more than 1,300 wounded Navy and Marine personnel from the war, many with traumatic head injuries. This is Barry Bagnato with the National Naval Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland. Now here's Harley Carnes.
Those who wear or who have worn military uniforms may be known to the underworld now.
Anger in Congress is growing with each new revelation. Rhode Island Democratic Senator Jack Reed is among the veterans whose personal information was stolen and is outraged that each week it's revealed millions more, including active duty servicemen and women, are involved.
It's, I think, the pattern of this administration. Spin the story out, little pieces here and there, rather than taking decisive, appropriate, and responsible action.
A group of House Democrats say that action should include free credit assistance for those affected and wrote a letter asking President Bush to request emergency funding to provide it. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
On this vote, the yeas are 49, the nays are 48.
It means the Senate didn't even vote on the marriage amendment to the Constitution. Supporters of the idea say they're in it for the long haul. It's okay.
We never expected this to happen, overnight, and each year we're going to move closer and closer to our goal.
Brian Brown is executive director of the Family Institute of Connecticut. The suspect in the bikini strangling of a Clemson student is being moved from Tennessee to South Carolina to face the murder charges today. Sheriff's deputies in Kanawha County, West Virginia, say a man shot five people, killing three of them, and then drove off, but getaway was not to be.
They had a flat tire, basically, and Pennsylvania State Police spotted the vehicle, ran the license plate number.
That's Lieutenant Brian Stover. 30-year-old Keith Jeffers is in jail for murder busted by a flat tire. Communists run Vietnam, and so the collective's needs rule. And so when it was decreed that karaoke would be part of the contract signing ceremony for the state oil monopoly, 21 officials who declined to sing in front of everyone are in trouble. They've been ordered to publicly criticize themselves for failing to participate in the collective's activities. On Wall Street, the Dow was down about 71 points today. Stock analyst Hugh Johnson. He tells us the Nasdaq lost about 11 points on the day, and oil prices, $70.82 a barrel, down $1.68. This is CBS News.
Hey, Tanya Roberts here, and I want to know, where are you going on your next romantic weekend getaway? Well, how about 3 days and two nights in Las Vegas? And what about you don't pay a dime for it? That's right. Act like a high roller in Vegas and pay nothing for it. It's all part of our celebration of Vegas's newest five-star resort, Tahiti Village. We want you to get out of Dodge. Stir up a little romantic magic in the most exciting city on earth with a complimentary second honeymoon, all on Tahiti Village. Come on. You know you deserve it. You know you want it. Las Vegas is calling. So stop what you're doing and call the special toll-free number, 877-33-GO-WIN. Oh, and as a bonus, if you call right now, they're going to throw in tickets to a hot show right on the strip. Can we say high roller treatment, baby? So call 877-33-GO-WIN for all the exciting details. That's 877-33-GO-WIN. Call now.
Count calories, exercise, and lay off the candy.
Want to feel younger, live longer? Well, back off from that vending machine. According to a new study, diet is the most important element to long-term health and longevity, trumping even exercise. Researchers at Washington University and St. Louis found that eating a low-calorie, nutritionally balanced diet lowered concentrations of T3, a hormone produced in the thyroid, which controls metabolism, body temperature, and, it appears, the production of free radicals, all of which affect aging and longevity. Jim Shanavy, CBS News.
The voodoo chief dances, the beauty queen prances, and Togo dreams. The sliver-sized West African country of Togo has made the World Cup soccer playoffs. Just managed to qualify Team 32. The voodoo chief fetish priest makes incantations and casts spells, has a bunch of naked voodoo priests and priestesses to back him up. A Togolese woman is crowned Miss World Cup. They're feeling pretty good about things. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Why do I like working at Verizon? It's the excitement my customers get each time I bring high-speed fiber-optic broadband into their homes. I feel like I've just brought them into the future. And I feel like my future is brighter, thanks to Verizon. Whenever I need it, I can take advantage of some of the best training in the industry. I'm able to keep up with the latest in the field. As our technology advances, so do I. I'm John Hare, biosplicing technician. Our people, our network. Verizon, we never stop working for you.
Hi, it's Glenn Beck. I know. Who's he? I'm the guy with a new show on Headline News at 9 Eastern and Pacific after Nancy Grace. Now, why would Headline News give me a show?
Maybe.
Because politically correct really isn't in my vocabulary. It's time somebody says what we're all thinking, from politics to pop culture. Every night, Headline News sets me loose. Not to save the world, just to look for some common sense. Watch me, Glenn Beck, every night on Headline News at 9 Eastern and
Peter B. Collins.
It's time for another fresh edition of the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm ready. Yeah! I am your humble host, Peter B. We got a lot to talk about today. You're invited to join us. We are live in Monterey on KRXA 540. We're live in Eureka on KGOE 1480. Our program is heard in the nighttime on 1240 Talk City KSAC Sacramento and on KPHX 1480 in Phoenix, Arizona. You can reach me by email, peter at peterbcollins.com. And you're always welcome to call into the program because, well, hey, it's a telephone talk show, you know? On the Central Coast, our line is 831-899-5792. You can call me toll-free from anywhere in the continental U.S. at 1-888-579-2540. Coming up later this hour, we're going to talk about congressional travel boondoggles. The Center for Public Integrity just completed an investigation that shows $50 million in free travel for elected officials and their staff members in Washington. We're going to get the lowdown on who went where and who is number one. You might be surprised. It's a progressive Democrat who holds the top slot as the most traveled at others' expense member of the House. Also on today's program, a woman I believe will be the next Secretary of State here in California, Deborah Bowen, a state senator, won the primary, the Democratic primary, yesterday, and we'll talk with her next hour about the key issues related to free and fair elections, free of corporate interference, free of fraud or hacking if electronic voting machines are utilized. Also, Kyle Hensel returned to our program today in our second hour. He attended the 9/11 Truth Conference in Chicago last weekend. I mentioned yesterday that the New York Times did cover the event, but they covered it like they would a Star Trek convention, full of kind of dismissive comments and, well, suggestions that people who believe we haven't been told the truth about 9/11 are somehow mad. Also on today's program, Dan Weintraub, the political reporter from the Sacramento Bee. We're going to check the San Benito County effect. I'll tell you, it was accurate again in yesterday's gubernatorial primary. And also on our program today, the man we think will be the next lieutenant governor in California, Democrat John Garamendi. He'll be with us in the third hour today. And if it all works out, we might talk with one of the minor candidates who got 2.7% of the vote in the governor's primary, the Democratic primary, yesterday. That's all ahead here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Joining me now, and a return visitor to our program, a guy who I admire and think is, he knows more than I do, Bill Hartung. He's at the World Policy Institute. Bill, welcome to our program today.
Thanks for having me again.
Nice to talk with you, sir. And I just noted one of your connections is with the Security Policy Working Group, and on the website is what I would take to be what they call a mission statement. And I wanted to read it just because, well, I have a comment about it. We seek to fundamentally reshape security policy in the United States and to broaden and deepen the public discourse on what constitutes true security in the aftermath of the September 11 terror attacks. We emphasize multilateral, cooperative approaches that lessen the need for and use of military force. Does this mean that you positioned yourselves as the antidote to the fear-mongering of the Bush administration?
Well, one would hope. It's a big job, you know, because those guys are good at using fear.
Yeah, they are. Have you read the new Greg Palast book?
No, I have not.
It's worth reading, Bill. Pick it up because he refers to it simply as the fear, kind of like that stuff Barry Bonds used, the clear. And his book is entertaining, but you know, well sourced and quite informative. And so I can recommend it to you. But just on that notion, the way fear has been used to support Republican political initiatives and to neutralize political opponents, it has been very potent since 9/11, has it not?
Oh, indeed. I mean, now, you know, Iran is the new kind of, you know, public enemy number one. And
The new Panama, the new Kuwait, the new Iraq?
Exactly. And, I mean, Iraq is sort of hard to cite since Saddam is gone and our troops are getting blown up over there and so forth. But Iran, you know, they don't bother to tell us that even if they were going full speed ahead trying to get nuclear weapons, it would take them 5 or 10 years. They make it seem like it's going to happen tomorrow. And their idea of diplomacy is to say, all right, you stop doing what you're doing, and then maybe we'll talk to you. And this whole deal is only on the table for a couple weeks, so let's get moving. Which seems a lot like what they did in the run-up to the Iraq War, where they said, oh, you know, we're going to seek diplomatic solutions. We have no intent to invade Iraq up until pretty much the day they did it.
So what is your take, then? I suspect you're cynical about the recent pronouncement by Secretary Rice that we're now going to engage in robust diplomacy, and the president's off-the-cuff remarks yesterday that he thinks there's some dialogue going on with Tehran and that he is encouraged.
Well, I think there's probably some internal divisions. I think Secretary Rice and those around here would like to have talks, but when the idea of talks first emerged, there was also some unnamed administration officials who said, well, you know, we decided we needed to do this for international purposes, and, you know, that then we'd be better basically set up should we want to take military action, because we could show that we had been reasonable. You know, we had offered to talk to them, and we had put this package on the table, and, you know, they were kind of hoping Iran would reject it out of hand, and then they'd be done with that. At least a, you know, significant portion of the administration, sort of the Dick Cheney types, really view this as just a step towards conflict, not as a diplomatic effort. But I think there may be others who actually hope, you know, something might come of it.
So it is pretextual?
Sure.
And is it a sincere effort on the part of this administration?
Well,
or are they kind of getting snookered because Ahmadinejad is not responding to the bluffs and is accepting what appears to be this new PR initiative about direct bilateral talks?
Well, I think they're still sort of stuck in this position that a lot of the military folks inside the administration don't think attacking Iran is a good idea. They certainly wouldn't do it with ground forces. They're all in Iraq, pretty much. And even a bombing campaign, a lot of them think would not be viable and would cause a lot of trouble, you know, if Iran started beefing up Hezbollah and getting more involved in Iraq and, you know, playing around with oil prices and so forth. So it's sort of like the hardliners, the neocons that are still, you know, have never been in a war but seem to like to start wars. They've got sort of a higher bar to clear this time, given what a mess they've made of Iraq. But they're working away, you know, hoping to get us there.
Mm-hmm. Now, what Rice essentially said was that we'll talk with you if you stop enriching uranium. And Iran essentially said, we'll talk with you, but we're not going to stop enriching uranium. And the next step was for the incentive package to be prepared, and it's now been delivered to Tehran. And this is carrots and sticks. It's rewards and penalties for, you know, prescribed behaviors. It doesn't strike me that Tehran is sincere in moving forward on our terms.
No. I think, you know, I guess there's no such thing as normal negotiations. But, you know, I would think that the way to negotiate would be you sit down and you have discussions. And then one side takes a step, another side takes a step. But basically, all of this package of incentives, even the U.S. willingness to talk to them, period, is all premised on the idea that they freeze their nuclear programs. So it's basically, you do what we want, and then we'll talk. You know, so it's almost set up for failure.
Now, let me just take the devil's advocate position for a moment, because I'm always trying to examine my own premises and try to figure out if there is unacknowledged brilliance in the Bush administration. So I was highly critical a few months back when Bush went to India and made a deal to provide, on terms very favorable to India, support for its nuclear power industry without any sanctions for its having developed a nuclear weapon and threatened to use it on its neighbor, Pakistan. Do you think that that was a brilliant move and that ultimately Tehran will accept a package like India and that we will then have constructive engagement with Iran?
I don't think they're going to get the kind of package that India got, because, you know, India's package was, you know, will the international monitors get to inspect their civilian but not their nuclear facilities. You know,
right. The deal was there are 24 facilities and 8 are off limits, I think.
And so that being the case, basically they're getting rewarded without having to meet their obligations or the obligations that would be, you know, in place if a country was under the non-proliferation treaty like Iran is. So, you know, in the Iranian case, they said, well, you know, maybe at some point we'll let you enrich uranium in your own country, but first the International Atomic Energy Agency and the National Security Council, the Security Council of the UN would have to agree that you're not seeking nuclear weapons. And the Bush folks said that could take years, if not decades. So, you know, it's kind of hard to call that a carrot. You know, I mean, the horse will be dead by the time it gets the carrot.
So my notion of hidden brilliance is, once again, off the mark.
I mean, I think what they're brilliant about is that they seem to be able to still manipulate public opinion here. Of course, it's helped by the fact that the details of these things are not, you know, often reported clearly or not uppermost in people's minds.
Yeah.
Whereas people who have a, you know, more of an interest, I mean, there's been this big outpouring of lobbying by the Indian American community in favor of this deal with India, because they view it as kind of putting India on the map diplomatically. And some of the folks involved, like the India-U.S. Business Council, have companies like GE and Westinghouse, which would probably make whatever reactors or components were transferred to India under the deal. So, you know, Bush gets this kind of narrow cast of people that care very much about it, and he hopes everybody else just kind of puts it out of their mind if they think about it at all. So in that sense, he might, despite what a bad deal it is, he might get some little domestic, you know, push out of this.
Mm-hmm. And I can imagine Bush gets confused by all this, and he thinks that the Indian Americans want casinos that are powered by nuclear generators. We'll pick up there in just a moment. William Hartung is our guest from the World Policy Institute. If you have a question or comment, bring it on. 831-899-5792 Central Coast or toll-free 888-579-2540. You're in tune with the Peter B. Collins Show.
Do you wish
wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540. If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside. We all have dreams, and dreams inspire possibilities in our lives. For many of us, one of our principal dreams is to live in harmony with our natural environment, to convert that sacred space we call home into a physical representation of our true nature.
Hi, I'm Peter Eichhorn, owner of Eichhorn Incorporated, a company dedicated to designing and creating of ecologically sound masonry projects to fulfill your particular desires and needs. Let me work with you to make your dreams real and your dwelling an enchanting, personalized home, one with nature, a true reflection of your inner desires. Make this new year special, and let me assist you in your quest. I have a lifetime of experience, I'm honest, my prices are affordable, and I love what I do. Call me at 393-1300. That's 393-1300.
And the Peter B. Collins Show continues. I'm Peter B., and our guest is William Hartung at the World Policy Institute. And Bill Hartung, we got a caller I want to go to in just a moment for you. But first, just to give you kind of an open-ended question and offer your current assessment, what do you think Americans should be most concerned about with our posture toward Iran currently?
Well, I think there's this danger that it is, not a sincere offer, and that it could be a step towards some sort of military action, probably a bombing campaign. So I think we have to keep a close eye on the administration, and just because they've used the words diplomacy, not assume that that means that's what we're going to get. And I think because there are, I think, some in the administration that actually would want to go that way, if there's support for the idea of genuine diplomacy, it might be quite helpful in this circumstance.
Mm-hmm. And our sources indicate that there are advanced American forces in Iran already. And we've also heard various reports about contingency plans that involve the assembly of three carrier groups in or near the Persian Gulf as a necessary trigger point to any kind of military action. Have you heard those same reports or any additional ones?
Yes, I've heard those things, and also that they're kind of protecting and trying to use a group called the MEK, the Mujahideen Khalq, which have been saying for quite a while that they want to overthrow the Iranian government. So there's a little camp for them in Iraq where they're protected by U.S. military, and they're trying to use some of them to infiltrate Iran, to look for military targets, to gather intelligence,
and so
forth.
Is that Camp Chalabi where they're...
Well, this is the sort of Chalabi group of the Iran, situation. And the little added twist is that this group is on the State Department's terrorist list.
Mm, yeah.
So,
no problem. Dave, join us from Humboldt. You're on with Bill Hartung.
Yes, William and Peter. I often hear good people groping to find some semblance of credibility or honest intent, some character in this administration. And then I feel strongly motivated to call in because their plan, very ambitious one, goes way back to the earliest days of PNAC. It was a plan for global domination, a new world order. Their plan is and has been to grab all of the oil nations in the Middle East and probably more. You have to believe that it's all extreme greed. You may also recall from the earliest days in PNAC that they said, in order to get the people to support this, we will need a new Pearl Harbor type of an event. The folks that stole our government are not nice people. Looking for credibility, there's places you can look for credibility, but it isn't in our White House today.
Bill, your comment?
Well, I think I would mostly agree with that. I mean, the people who were involved in the Project for the New American Century are sprinkled all over the administration. And they include the people who up till now have had the strongest pull on Bush, Dick Cheney, and Donald Rumsfeld. I do think there's some folks in the State Department who would be more inclined to take a different path, but it may well be that they're outnumbered and that they're not going to get to, have their say. But I think the one thing that at least slows down the PNAC agenda is what a fiasco they've made in Iraq. Mm-hmm. These are the folks who told us it would be a cakewalk and our troops would be greeted with candy and flowers instead of AK-47s and improvised explosive devices. So I think the intent is there. I just don't know if they can carry out those plans, in the current environment. But I would agree with the caller that's the agenda of most of these folks in the administration. Yeah.
Dave, thank you very much.
Thank
Bill,
you.
Just a minute remaining. What is your sense of the true motivation of the administration? And do you think ultimately they want to find a pretext to attack Iran, whether it comes with UN support or not?
I think there's a strong current in the administration that is aiming towards that goal. And they've got support from the same old groups, the same old right-wing think tanks and media outlets and so forth. So I just think it's going to be harder for them to make the sale. I think Bush was a little surprised at how Iraq went. I think he was really believing the hype.
And do you think Tony Blair's recent visit was a reality check for the president?
I think it may have been. But that doesn't mean down the road that the Cheney-Rumsfeld sort of axis can't, convince Bush to take military action.
You mean the cabal?
The cabal, yes.
Thank you, Bill. We'll talk again soon.
Okay,
and by the way, your colleagues Carl Canetta and Winslow T. Wheeler have been on recently, both great gentlemen.
Oh, glad to hear that.
All right. Coming up next, congressional travel, $50 million worth. Where do I sign up, huh?
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Doesn't your Volvo deserve to be maintained and repaired by the best? Hans Auto Repair in Seaside is locally owned and operated by Mike Brooks and Tracy Polacco. Tracy is a factory-trained Volvo service advisor. Mike is a factory-trained and certified Volvo technician with over 17 years of experience servicing and repairing Volvos. Join the many Monterey Bay Volvo owners who only trust Hans Auto Repair to service their Volvos. Hans Auto Repair is at 384 Olympia Avenue in Seaside. Call Hans at 583-9820. That's 583-9820. Parents, do you need cash for college? This year, more than $100 billion is available for financial aid. Let AboutCollegeFunding.com help you navigate the complicated process to accessing your share of these funds. AboutCollegeFunding.com is now offering free one-hour consultations for parents in need of answers. To schedule your free one-hour consultation with RJ Moyer, call 1-888-337-9775. That's 1-888-337-9775.
Remember, the early bird gets the cash.
In response to rising interest rates, Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage in Salinas offers the following advice to homeowners with variable rate loans. Don't panic or overreact. If you feel trapped in a frightening squeeze, first analyze your situation calmly, then take the best action available. There are so many types of loans, one is very likely to meet your particular needs. For a free consultation with Victor Munoz at Creative Mortgage, call 757-0436. Let Victor share with you the knowledge that he has built up over many years in the mortgage industry. Call Victor at 757-0436 today.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and fun. I interview authors, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make the Monterey Bay area such a delicious slice of our tasty planet. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for tasty new shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Sponsored in part by Kitchen Studio.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy together are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. Research and common sense show that children learn by playing, and the caring management and staff at Thinker Toys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to show your love, a gift from Thinker Toys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank engines and tracks, puzzles, board games, and children's books, all very reasonably priced, you can't go wrong with a gift from Thinker Toys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos, or the just-renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
From the left coast, you have found the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm delighted. Still to come today, the winner of the Deborah election yesterday. State Senator Deborah Bowen will join us coming up next hour. We hope she'll be the next Secretary of State in California. But first, congressional travel makes for a small, small, small world.
Smile means friendship to everyone. Though the mountains divide and the oceans are wide, it's a small world after all.
Hey, Mickey, what do you say we go on a fact-finding mission and get somebody else to pay for it, huh? Do a little golf in Scotland, some scuba diving in Australia. And all the while, we'll tell our constituents that we were doing their business.
It's a world of home and a world of home. It's a match that we share.
Joining us this half hour is Jim Morris at the Center for Public Integrity. He's on the team that worked diligently to publish a new study called Power Trips, which tells us about travel by congressional elected officials and staffers during the period from January 2000 through mid-2005. Jim Morris, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you very much.
How do we get invited on these junkets? It's my jealousy that is mostly triggered by these reports, Jim.
Understandably, yeah. Well, I don't think you and I will be invited anytime soon on a $25,000 junket, but one needs to be a member of Congress or a staffer in Congress, preferably a member or staffer who are part of an influential committee.
Sure, yeah. Could I get a ride in a Predator if I become friends with General Atomics? I mean, after all, they have a travel budget of $660,000 for lawmakers.
Well, you could if you were a staffer. Again, you probably can't otherwise. Yeah, they spent more money than, as far as we could tell, any other corporation, including some much bigger corporations.
France took it on the chin after 9/11. We had Freedom Fries instead of French fries, and then in 2004... there was this whisper campaign from the Republicans that John Kerry was too French. But it turns out that Paris is one of the most popular destinations for these congressional junkets.
That's true. We found at least 200 trips to Paris and, closely followed by 150 trips or so to Hawaii and 140 to Italy.
You never know where the facts will be found.
Right. That's for sure. They're found more often in Paris, apparently, than in, Buffalo or Des Moines.
Right. Now, what are the rules currently, Jim Morris, about congressional? Let's start with the electeds, and we'll come back to the staffers. But for an elected official, what are the rules?
The rules are actually pretty clear, which although they're not, although they're widely ignored, and we'll get to that in a minute. But I mean, basically, these trips are supposed to be educational or fact-finding in nature. They're supposed to be connected to one's official duties, and there are some limitations on the amount of time you can spend on a trip, domestic or foreign. There's some limitations, such as lobbyists cannot pay directly for trips.
Launder the money first.
Well, some have chosen to do that, yes.
Yeah.
And
no starch, please.
Pardon me?
No starch, please.
Yeah, really.
And I'm going to keep it in the freezer for a while.
right, exactly, in some cases, yes. And you have to disclose these trips, supposedly within 30 days of taking one. Turns out many don't do that, or when they do it, they leave a lot of pertinent information off their disclosure forms.
Well, and I want to direct people to your website because I took a visit earlier today at the Center for Public Integrity, and you're on the web at publicintegrity.org.
Correct.
And if you click on the button on the homepage for Power Trips, it takes you to the subpage that is loaded with details. And one of the links there is to see some of these sample forms. And the first one that popped up for me is Tom Tancredo, the anti-immigration activist from Colorado, congressman in his, fourth or fifth term, I guess, by now. And he filled out a form, and, boy, that was really vague. Fact-finding,
well,
$50 a day.
Absolutely, and there are just so many. There are far too many for us to have posted like this that are missing, sometimes not even vague, don't even have vague information on them. They're simply missing information like the name of a sponsor or where they went or, the amount of money that was spent. So they just sort of summarily write in, more often than not, something like Congressman Tancredo did, in this case, congressional fact-finding. Well, what does that tell you? Not much.
No. And there isn't even a space to say whether they had a good time or not.
No. I think we can assume that often they did, depending on the destination, of course.
So now let's talk about staffers. I would have presumed that staffers, aren't permitted to take this kind of grease.
No, they are permitted. They have to get the permission of either the lawmaker or some other sort of a supervisor in Congress. But again,
from mom?
Pardon me?
A note from mom?
Probably, yeah. Yeah. There certainly doesn't seem to have been any hesitation shown by the people who do approve these trips, because we found that of the 23,000 or so trips that are in the records, about three quarters are by staffers as opposed to the lawmakers themselves, which is maybe on one level not terribly surprising because there are more staffers than lawmakers, but on another level it was surprising, and I think it shows to some extent how important these folks are seen by special interests, that it's just as important or maybe more important to get the ear of a staffer, especially of a, say, a chief of staff, than it is of the congressperson.
Mm-hmm. And is the acceptance of a trip by an elected official or a staffer seen as income? Is it, you know, if I accept something like that, for example, if I win on Wheel of Fortune and they give me a trip to Paris, I got to pay income tax on that.
That is the short answer is I don't know, but that is a very good question, and it's come up a lot in the last couple of days. We've kind of been kicking it around here, and I do not know the answer to that. But it's some of these trips, as we report, are valued at $20,000 or $25,000, or in one case $30,000 for a lawmaker and his or her spouse.
Mm-hmm. And you can imagine if it were legitimate business of the committee. We don't care about deficits anymore. So
right.
Why wouldn't we just have the government pay for this important fact-finding travel and avoid this appearance of conflict of interest?
That is a very good point, and some have proposed that idea. They've said let's just ban all privately funded travel. Granted, it would knock out some probably legitimate educational trips, but it would remove the appearance of impropriety. And it would force the traveler to, justify his or her trip because tax dollars would be funding that trip. And of course, there are government-funded trips to places like Iraq and Afghanistan and hurricane-damaged parts of the Gulf Coast. And I don't think too many people question the propriety of those trips.
Yeah, I mean, I would be comfortable with properly disclosed business travel on the part of the people who we hire to run our government, the staffers
right.
and the elected officials. And
exactly.
if it is real business and you're going to New York to have a meeting with Ben Bernanke at the Federal Reserve or, anything that is a legitimate business purpose, I would much prefer to have it paid for by the taxpayers and properly disclosed. Of course, I'm not in charge.
right. Well, and there are, and we should point out, there are a number of members of Congress who don't feel comfortable taking a lot of these trips. There are countless lawmakers who took maybe two or three trips during our study period, and those were pretty modest trips, maybe to give a commencement speech at their alma mater or to go to a one-day conference somewhere. So it certainly isn't the case that everyone in Congress is abusing this system, but those who are pretty over the top.
Jim Morris is with us from the Center for Public Integrity. If you have a question or comment about these congressional junkets, you can get on the line at 831-899-5792 or call me toll-free and, hey, we'll just charge it to Congress. 888-579-2540 is that number. That's 888-579-2540. Jim, you and the team, and we should give credit here to Northwestern University, my alma mater, the Medill Journalism School,
right.
and also American Public Media, they assisted the Center for Public Integrity in this massive review of documents.
They did.
How the hell did you do it? I mean, one of the things that these people expect is that there is so much paperwork on congressional travel that nobody will ever look at it.
You're exactly right, and that's been a big part of the problem. These records are not available online, although we are about to post our database. I say about to, we hope by the end of the month, to make our searchable database public so people can search it for themselves. But
did you clear that with the NSA?
I think I just did, actually. But
well, Benny is our official minder at the NSA, so he'll pass the word.
Okay, well, that's good. But the sort of funny thing is these records are literally, in one case, kept in the basement of a house office building in three-ring binders, cannot be removed. You have to photocopy the documents in the House, and the Senate's a little better, but in neither case can you or I go online and just say, hey, I think I'll look up my congressman and see where he went last year. You can't do it. You physically have to go look through these records, and so that's what we did. And I say we, I mean dozens of people here and with the other organizations spent months going to these offices and photocopying and scanning for the website, punching in data, creating this huge database. It's not easy, and I think that's why this thing has really ballooned, especially in the last few years. The last full year of data we have, which is 2004, I think there was about $10 million worth of these trips, and that had been trending upward.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a quick break, and you can go somewhere, even leave the country for the next 3 minutes, but then we're going to be right back with Jim Morris from the Center for Public Integrity. Again, if you have a question or comment about these congressional free trips, give us a call, toll-free at 888-579-2540, or on the Central Coast, our local line, 831-899-5792. Puts you through to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Del Monte Cafe features authentic American food carefully prepared at very reasonable prices. Hungry for delicious omelets, pancakes, sandwiches, and pasta dishes? Come visit us for breakfast and lunch at the Del Monte Cafe, located at 1642 Del Monte Boulevard in Seaside. We're open 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday from 7:30 to 2 p.m. For takeout orders, call us at 394-7851. That's 394-7851, the Del Monte Cafe, 1642 Del Monte Boulevard, Seaside.
This is Frank Don. On Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. here on KRXA 540 a.m., join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour, a live call-in program to discuss astrology, the astrology of the world, and your own personal astrology. Let me answer your questions, and let me teach you how astrology can help you make better life choices. Here on KRXA 540 a.m. from 7 to 8 every Sunday evening, join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
We all have dreams, and dreams inspire possibilities in our lives. For many of us, one of our principal dreams is to live in harmony with our natural environment, to convert that sacred space we call home into a physical representation of our true nature.
Hi, I'm Peter Eichhorn, owner of Eichhorn Incorporated, a company dedicated to designing and creating of ecologically sound masonry projects to fulfill your particular desires and needs. Let me work with you to make your dreams real and your dwelling an enchanting, personalized home, one with nature, a true reflection of your inner desires. Make this new year special, and let me assist you in your quest. I have a lifetime of experience, I'm honest, my prices are affordable, and I love what I do. Call me at 393-1300. That's 393-1300.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, our exclusive travel partner, Naked Airlines.
I used to fly with my clothes on. Scanning to banning, one airline had tanning, and this was the ad they ran. Fly safe, fly naked, no weapons to find. You're safer with nothing on. Naked Airlines. No carry-ons, no clothing, no laptops. Well, laptops. And I'm feeling shy. Instead of metal detection, no clothing, directions from the nude flight attendant, a guy. Damn. Fly safe, fly naked, no weapons to find.
We're We're talking about the new report called Power Trips, which discloses $50 million worth of travel for congressional officials and staffers, all paid for by somebody else. And Jim Morris from the Center for Public Integrity, did any of these disclosure forms indicate that they flew on Naked Airlines?
No, not that we've found yet, but we're still looking.
And do they disclose whether they travel coach or business or first class or Virgin sleeper class?
Well, many of them go beyond that and travel in corporate jets, which trump all of the above.
Right.
They travel in the corporate jet, maybe spend 2 or 3 or 4 hours in the air or more, and they are, as you might say, a captive audience. They're in a corporate jet with just a few other representatives of a particular company or a trade association. So it's a pretty good arrangement for the sponsor.
And correct me on where we are right now. There was a proposal to ban all travel paid by third parties, and that's been modified to ban that sort of travel until the end of this year. That's a real substantive step toward cleaning this problem up.
I don't think that's even still on the table, quite frankly. I mean,
really?
what's on the table right now, as I understand it, are some very, very modest reforms that would simply require a little bit more disclosure. You might have to reveal a few more details about what you did on a trip and, you know, who paid for it. So, I mean, I'm not even sure this, you know, ban through the end of the year is going to go through. It's just, and ironically, the ban was, the idea of a ban was publicly floated by Speaker Hastert, Dennis
right.
Hastert,
yeah.
back in January. And then it went away very quickly, that uh-huh. idea, and has not resurfaced.
And was part of your thinking in releasing report at this time to try to keep the pressure on that front?
Well, it was just, it's just something that needs to be out there. There was no particular, didn't necessarily play into the thinking of when we released it, but it is something that, you know, we think still should be in the public eye and, quite frankly, has sort of faded from public view in the last couple of months. And we want to make sure it stays out there and is debated.
Yeah. And I'm reading here from an article a couple of days ago in the San Francisco Chronicle. Congressional leaders were among the top recipients of trips paid by private groups. New House Majority Leader Boehner from Ohio, former House Majority Leader Tom DeLay, current Majority Whip Roy Blunt, and Speaker Hastert were among the list of lawmakers whose offices took more than $350,000 in trips since
Correct.
2000. So,
Correct.
They're pretty comfortable with this kind of arrangement.
They're very comfortable with it, and as I said earlier, many members are not comfortable with it and have established personal policies of accepting little or no privately funded travel just because they don't like the way it looks. And we've talked to some of those folks too.
And three of the names that have been reported in this Chronicle article coming out of your study include Barbara Lee of Oakland, one of my favorite members of Congress. She took $248,000 in trips, or let's be more specific, her office did.
Her office,
she was
yeah.
not necessarily on every one of those trips herself.
No, she probably wasn't.
Mm-hmm. And they include $11,000 to go to Cape Town, South Africa, paid for by the Chicago Council on Foreign Relations and the South African Institute for International Affairs, a trip just under $10,000 to India. Those are a couple on her list. Then Richard Pombo, the Republican who heads the powerful Resource Committee in the House, he had a tab of $218,000 attributed to his office, including a trip to New Zealand that he took with his wife. And he's the one who also stuck taxpayers for the tab for an RV trip that he took around the national parks in the West a couple of years ago.
Interesting. Very interesting.
And then George Miller, also a great Democrat, he's on the hook for $201,000 in private trips attributed to his office. He and the missus went to Finland, the Cayman Islands, Moscow, Cancun, Jamaica, and Puerto Rico. So he's really been spanning the globe.
Yeah, not too bad. And that's the other thing, that one of the other things we found is that spouses often go on these, sometimes children, but more often spouses go on these trips. And one has to wonder why, if it's a fact-finding mission, why the spouse needs to be there as well.
Well, to make sure her husband finds the right facts.
I guess so, apparently, yeah. Absolutely.
Now, Charlie Rangel from New York, had to file an amended disclosure form after your researchers studied a trip that he took to Cuba in 2002. What happened there?
Well, he acknowledged after he took a trip to Cuba 4 years ago in 2002 along with a group of other New Yorkers. And on his original disclosure form, he reported he did not report the fact that one of the sponsors of the trip was the government of Cuba. He listed a small environmental group out of Minneapolis as the sole sponsor of the trip, and also he improperly accepted expenses for his son. You may take a spouse or a child, but you may not take both, or you may not accept expenses for both. He did, and so when our reporter called him about that and about failing to list Cuba as a sponsor, he amended his form not too long before our report was published, and he reimbursed the Cuban government and the person who supplied the plane to fly them to Cuba. He reimbursed the two of them not quite $2,000 for his son's trip.
And isn't it a violation of law to travel to Cuba? Isn't that under the there's a Helms, maybe Helms-Burton? I know it's one of Jesse Helms.
It's complicated. I mean, it's not on its face a violation of law to travel to Cuba in an official capacity like this.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other forms you have to fill out if in fact the Cuban government helps fund the trip or pays on the ground expenses, which is the case. Which was the case here. And last time we checked, which was a week or two ago, he had not filed that form either. It's a different form. It's not the regular travel disclosure form.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing about this is that Mr. Rangel has been in Congress for 35 years and claimed not to know the rule, for example, on taking the extra companion, in this case his son.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that tells you a little bit, if you've got a veteran of, 35 years in Congress who doesn't know the rule or several of the rules, apparently, then, you can assume that a lot of them don't.
Yeah. Jim Morris with us from the Center for Public Integrity. Did the study Power Trips uncover any new information about junkets paid for by Jack Abramoff or his associates?
It did. We have not yet released those stories, and I'm going to just, refer people to our website, publicintegrity.org. We hope to have some stories next week, one story in particular that deals with Abramoff-related trips. So I'll just defer and we'll,
Can you leak in advance anything besides the St. Andrews golf junket to Scotland?
Nothing that dramatic, but let's just say one of our stories will be dealing with a number of other Abramoff-related trips, and I think I'll just leave it at that.
All right. And one other item here, the Nuclear Energy Institute spent $1.1 million on travel for lawmakers and staff since 2000. And I'm just curious, any indication that they trained people on the proper pronunciation of nuclear?
I'm not sure about that.
It's one of my pet peeves.
Yes, absolutely.
It's such a simple word.
Yeah, you would think. You would think, yeah.
Okay, and Jim, for you, what was the biggest surprise in the Power Trip study?
I think the biggest surprise was just the staggering amount of money spent on some of these individual trips. As I mentioned, I'm looking at the top 10 list in front of me here, and $27,000, $28,000, $29,000, on up to $31,000. Just extraordinarily expensive trips with $500 night hotel rooms and, just more lavish trips than I could ever imagine. And one can only assume that they took these trips thinking that they would never be made public.
And they were paid for by somebody else. Did the people who actually traveled get to keep the frequent flyer miles, too?
Well, again, a lot of these were on corporate jets.
I guess they had to forego the
frequent flyer miles.
Well, you get free ethanol from Archer Daniels Midland. Jim Morris, thank you for the study. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Visit publicintegrity.org and read about this for yourself. Power Trips, it's called. Coming up next, we're going to talk to the woman I think will be our next Secretary of State, Senator Deborah Bowen, next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Tired of stale syndicated right-wing blowhards?
And we are thrilled and honored to have with us Donald Rumsfeld.
You got a bunch of dopey kids watching these shows. Oh, O'Reilly!
Here on KRXA 540, you can hear a fresh local liberal blowhard.
And another thing, Coach, you could strip me naked, stake me to an anthill, pour honey all over me, and I still wouldn't vote for a Republican.
Hal on the show every morning from 9 to 10, only on KRXA 540. Down in
Tom Hartman.
And over the last 3 days, the new conservative talking points that have been going out are blame it on Bill Clinton.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
The high gas prices, we got to shift the blame to the Democrats, say it's all because he didn't let them drill in Anwar. The real reason is because for almost 20 years now, the Republicans have prevented him from raising CAFE standards, the corporate average fuel efficiency standards. Average fuel efficiency of a car right now is back where it was in the 70s.
Tom Hartman, weekday mornings 10 to noon on KRXA 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The top Marine allows no excuses for bad conduct in Iraq.
They absolutely no right from wrong.
The anti-gay marriage amendment fails badly in the Senate.
We were hoping to get over 50%, but that didn't happen today.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Bill Whitney. Marine Commandant Mike Hagee has seen the secret photos of Iraqi women and children shot dead at close range.
I am gravely concerned about the serious allegations concerning actions of some Marines at Haditha and Hamdaniya.
CBS News correspondent David Martin has more.
The nation's top Marine refused to discuss what investigations into the killings of 24 Iraqis in Haditha and one in Hamdaniya have found, but he promised to go as high up the chain of command as the evidence leads.
If it turns out that an individual violated rules or regulations, he will be held accountable regardless of grade or position.
Seven Marines and a Navy corpsman are being held in the brig at Camp Pendleton, California for the Hamdaniya killing. And the attorney for one of them says he expects murder charges.
The Haditha killings could also result in murder charges. Failure was a foregone conclusion, but supporters of a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage were hoping to do better than they did today. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports.
Backers were disappointed to fall short of even a simple Senate majority, much less the two-thirds needed to pass a constitutional amendment. Senate Republican leader Bill Frist argued gay marriage, legal only in Massachusetts, threatens the institution of marriage everywhere.
Will the people amend the Constitution to preserve marriage as it has always been?
But Illinois Democrat Dick Durbin says this was political pandering to energize Republican voters.
It's not about the preservation of marriage. It's about the preservation of the majority.
Though they can't pass it either, House Republican leaders say they'll have a vote next month. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Now this.
In the search for ways to improve health care, we'd like to add another solution. iBeams. That's right, iBeams. A member of the American Institute of Architects can use iBeams to create spaces that enhance healing by easing a patient's mind, sharpening a surgeon's skill, softening a nurse's touch. Not bad for a hunk of iron. Get an AIA architect involved early. You'll feel much better. AIA. Good design makes a difference. Visit AIA.org.
At Chevy, we've been challenging Americans to check out our cars and trucks versus the competition, and they've been finding out the facts. Did you know that 9 out of 10 cars Chevy sells get an EPA-estimated 30 highway miles to the gallon or better? Like Cobalt LS, with an EPA-estimated 34 highway miles per gallon with manual transmission. Claim based on RL Book & Company CYE05 passenger car total registrations in the U.S. Compare Chevy head-to-head. Go to Edmunds.com. Chevy, America's number one brand, America's number one value.
Toyota's reputation for quality is intact with the release of this year's J.D. Power and Associates initial quality rankings. The Japanese automaker is number one in 11 out of 19 categories. But J.D. Power says the auto industry overall has improved.
The news to consumers is that quality continues to improve and the voice of customers throughout the United States are being heard.
Corporate America is coughing up money to support fuel economy.
There are now three big companies offering their workers subsidies to buy hybrid cars. Google pays $5,000, Timberland $3,000. Now Bank of America is offering $3,000, 21,000 bank employees eligible in three cities so far. An official at the Environmental Protection Agency says that's a big deal because the second largest bank in this country can have a lot of influence on other companies. Dan Raviv, CBS News.
An indictment unsealed in New York today charges a 26-year-old American student named Syed Hashmi with providing military equipment to Al-Qaeda. Hashmi is in custody in London, where he was arrested as he was about to board a flight to Pakistan. When he made a court appearance today, he would only confirm his name and date of birth. Hashmi is fighting extradition. Kimberly Dozier is home. A military plane carrying the wounded CBS News correspondent arrived this afternoon at Andrews Air Force Base outside Washington.
This is Barry Bagnato at the National Naval Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland. With a police escort, Kimberly arrived here on a bus with Iraq War military casualties to begin a long recovery process that includes learning to walk again. Rods must be inserted in her fractured legs. Months of hard rehabilitation are ahead.
Back in February, when a 5-year-old boy dialed 911 in Detroit to say his mother had collapsed, the operators told him to stop playing on the phone. By the time help arrived, the mother was dead. Today, two 911 dispatchers were charged with willful neglect of duty. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
If you're living in a space that's too small or too large or too old or just too ugly, here's what you do. Take a 2x4 to the problem. Maybe some 2x6s. Heck, just take all your lumber and give it to a member of the American Institute of Architects. We'll design a home that fits your needs and your budget to a T. Call an AIA architect early, so your living space won't be too this or too that, but just right. AIA. Good design makes a difference. Visit AIA.org.
The following is a message from Pfizer.
Dr. Drew Pinsky here on a subject most guys would rather ignore, erectile dysfunction. Believe it or not, nearly half of all guys over 40, and some even younger, have ED. If your sex life leaves something to be desired, even part of the time, do something about it. To learn more about ED and how to treat it, talk to your doctor or visit justasktoday.com. Do it for you and your partner.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm glad you're listening. We now know what it cost Steve Wesley to lose his campaign for governor yesterday. $40 per vote. Ouch. I mean, he could have put it on eBay for a lot less. Coming up later this hour, Kyle Hentz returns to our program. He'll report on the 9/11 Truth Conference in Chicago last weekend. But first, fresh from her victory in yesterday's primary, and I would candidly call it a stunning one, we're joined by State Senator Deborah Bowen, who could be our next Secretary of State. Senator, welcome to our program and congratulations.
Thank you, and it's fabulous to be with you.
And yesterday, California voters, the Democrats, went in, and those who were less informed were confronted with dueling Deborahs in the Secretary of State race. And we've been telling people that there's one Deborah who really gets it. And her name is Bowen. When it comes to the issues of privatizing elections, the risk to the process from these electronic voting machines and other anomalies, I talked to your colleague, Senator Ortiz, and I came away nonplussed. She did not convey to me that she gets the real risk to our democracy that I believe you do get.
Well, I think, you know, it's pretty clear just looking at the Pew polls that tell us that 52% of Americans aren't confident that their vote will be counted as it was cast, that we need to do something because people are suspicious. And you cannot have a functioning democracy where people aren't pretty darn sure that what they did in the polling place is going to be reflected in the outcome of an election.
Yeah. Your results are very impressive, Senator. If you don't mind my saying so, you kicked ass.
Thank you. I want to share the victory with the grassroots and the netroots, because that's really what this was all about. The organizing, the person-to-person work that went on over the internet by email was just phenomenal, and I couldn't be more fortunate.
But the pre-election polling showed you and Senator Ortiz in a statistical tie. Just a couple of points separated you in those polls, and there were huge undecideds. But you won with 61% of the vote, 1,083,000 votes, and that's more than Phil Angelides got.
I don't think that the traditional polling methods know how to reach people who are doing much of spending a lot of time doing on blogs and with email. I just don't think that the kind of sampling that's done captures that.
Well, I can appreciate that, and at the same time, neither you nor your opponent had the kind of money it takes to run to carpet bomb the state with TV ads, and you had to rely on inexpensive methods to get your name out there. And I do think you benefited from emails and that kind of support. My old pal, John Vasconcellos, the
yes.
former dean of the legislature, he sent out an email, and I know a lot of people responded favorably to that. And, of course, our buddy Brad at bradblog.com, while he doesn't actively endorse candidates, like me, he made it very clear that we know that you understand these issues and will fight as hard as you can for our interests.
The impact of the personal emails that people sent out around the state, I think, is profound. And I think it's what we will be seeing in elections in the future. It's a much less centralized kind of campaign structure that doesn't depend on having $1 million to spend on a TV buy, and that really relies on individuals to tell people in their circles, hey, I know somebody who's running who I trust and who I think would do a good job. And that's so much more effective coming from someone you know than, four TV ads.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with State Senator Deborah Bowen. She is the winner of yesterday's primary and the Democratic nominee for Secretary of State. She'll face off against Bruce McPherson this November. Senator, tell me what message you take away from the failed administration of Kevin Shelley as Secretary of State.
Well, I think, first I have to give Mr. Shelley a hand for beginning to really evaluate what was going on with electronic voting and the Diebold systems in California. And as you know, we had problems in a number of counties with electronic voting yesterday.
Yeah.
But, I don't think that his difficulties had to do with how he handled voting equipment issues.
No, I agree. But his use of the funds under HAVA, the Federal Help America Vote Act, came into question.
Right, and there I think the lesson is that you have to set up a structure when you're dealing with HAVA funding that sets up objective criteria for how grants will be managed, and I'm in favor of having a citizens committee make the recommendations using a set of objective criteria. I think that it's important to get the voter registration funding and the funding for doing things like training voters on new voting equipment out to community organizations, but it has to be done, based on objective criteria. And it's the same kind of thing that we do when we're funding community organizations to do things like energy efficiency or digital divide programs. So there's precedent for it in other state agencies, and it can be done in a way that still gets the money out down the food chain, which is really important.
Senator, Tony Miller is a guy who spent years at the Secretary of State's office under March Fong Yu, who was there for way too long. He was acting Secretary of State. He ran for the office and didn't win. But do you see, is he somebody you rely on as a part of your kitchen cabinet? He has, the greatest institutional memory of issues related to that office.
There are some terrific people at the Secretary of State's office and who have been at the Secretary of State's office, but I've also been fortunate to have a large number of people who are just regular citizens. Some of them are computer experts who've been willing to sit down and analyze the electronic voting certification and various other things that the legislature or I would never have the time or the capacity to do with that level of detail. So it's been a phenomenal exercise in empowering people to do work that makes a difference and shows up in my email box at 11 o'clock at night. And, here's who is Paul Kraft and what did he have to do with the testing of the Diebold equipment and why was he here? These are kinds of things that lots of minds working together can handle that no one person could do alone.
Mm-hmm. And Senator Bowen, yesterday, as you touched on a second ago, there were some anomalies in California. San Joaquin County and San Diego County both reported in precincts they had problems getting set up. Poll workers didn't show up. Polls weren't opened in some cases for 3 hours from the scheduled opening time. What were the most serious problems that have come to your attention so far?
Well, I can't rank of seriousness yet because I haven't had time to investigate what happened in all the places where there were difficulties. But any time that you have voters being sent away from the polls without being able to vote, or there aren't enough paper ballot backups, and I know it's a pain in the rear to get the paper out there, but the fact is anything that uses a plug in electricity is going to fail from time to time, and all of us know that, whether it's a fax machine or a vacuum cleaner. So creating a series of backups is very important, and the paper trail is one of those kinds of backups. Mm-hmm. We need to take a look to see what happened in Kern County, what happened in San Diego, and see what we need to learn for creating processes that allow us to learn from mistakes.
And Alameda went forward into the past and used paper ballots entirely. They didn't have enough scanners, so they ganged up at election headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to produce their results, the final, by noon today?
Yeah, they made a decision not to invest in a new electronic voting system because they felt there was too much uncertainty and that it wouldn't be financially prudent, and I applaud them for that decision. And they were using precinct optical scanners, which meant that each ballot had to be fed into the scanner one ballot at a time rather than in a batch.
Mm-hmm.
So it was slower, and that's something it's a one-time problem, but not one that kept people from voting. And the kinds of errors that I'm most concerned about are ones that keep people from voting in the first instance, or where there's something wrong with the tally and we don't have a paper backup that allows us to audit.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is a partisan concern, perhaps, but many are concerned about the Busby-Bilbray race in San Diego yesterday, which I understand was conducted on Diebold machines. And a very close margin, 4,000 votes between Busby and Bilbray. Lots of money dumped into that race, so many people are a little concerned. I realize it's early, but do you have any knowledge that gives you concern about the validity of that particular outcome?
Well, first let me say that I don't think concerns about the integrity or validity of an election are ever partisan, because in one election the shoe will be on one foot, in the next it'll be on the other foot. So it is in everyone's interest to have elections be open, transparent, and honest. I am concerned about reports of machines going home with poll workers before the election. That's one of the kinds of process things that needs to be changed, because regardless of whether anybody did anything, it undermines people's confidence in the results. And in order to have voters, citizens, deem the results of an election to be legitimate, they need to have confidence that the results are fair and square.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm going to focus on that as we look at what happened in San Diego. Is anything that undermines voter confidence in the integrity of the process needs to have a tough look. And if we can work through processes and procedures and transparent methods that allow people to verify what's happening and feel confident, we will be better off in our democracy.
Indeed.
In every part of it.
Senator Deborah Bowen, she won the primary yesterday. She's the Democratic nominee for Secretary of State. Let's give you a little time off, and then maybe in a month or so I'd like to ask you back on the program, and we'll talk about how you will face off against Bruce McPherson in November.
Terrific. I'd be happy to join you again.
Congrats again, Senator.
Thank you so much.
All right, that's Deborah Bowen. Coming up next, our man Brad Friedman checks in. We'll talk about that election, the one in San Diego yesterday, see what kinds of questions he has at this point. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Hi, I'm Dan Brown. president of At Your Service Premier Event Planning and Transportation. We specialize in events ranging from a two-person anniversary or 200 guests attending the great AT&T or the concourse. We have a fleet of sedans, limousines, vans, mini coaches, as well as vintage cars that make any event special. Weddings, wine tours, or corporate events, give us a call, 625-5363, or check us out on the web, MontereyLimos.com.
This week on Rock, Roll, and Real Estate, meet Glenn Plantone, real estate entrepreneur. Glenn works out of Las Vegas, Nevada, but will share his success of investing in real estate around the United States, picking out hot spots which he feels is the next big thing. That's this week on Rock, Roll, and Real Estate, your number one source for all your real estate needs every Sunday morning at 10. Heard all over Northern California and online at rockrollandrealestate.com. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. 408-892-3376.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
"We're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service."
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
KRXA 540 looks at your traffic now at 421. Here's Metro Diane.
Well, we have a major injury accident in Salinas. It's Highway 68 at Hitchcock Road. The entire roadway is actually closed down at this point. Two vehicles involved, and also they hit a telephone pole. So a medical helicopter is on scene, and traffic is being diverted off at Hitchcock. So probably best to just avoid the area. Again, it's Salinas, Highway 68 at Hitchcock Road. In Salinas, also northbound 101 before Main Street, keep your eyes open for a truck bed liner in the two left-hand lanes. And in Santa Cruz, southbound 1 before Morrissey Boulevard, a stalled car blocking one of the lanes there. This report is brought to you by Napa Auto Parts. Protect your car's engine with clean motor oil. Stop by Napa Auto Parts today and pick up Valvoline conventional motor oil for only $1.99 per quart. Napa, get the good stuff. I'm Diane with traffic on KRXA 540.
Thank you, Diane. We'll check back in half an hour.
Let's do it.
22 minutes past the hour. Coming up in a few, Kyle Hentz joins us to report on that conference in Chicago last weekend, Seekers of Truth around 9/11. Joining us now with an update on yesterday's primary election here in California is our go-to guy on election issues, the proprietor of BradBlog.com, Brad Friedman, his Bradness. Hello, Brad.
Hello, Peter. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm always better after an election. It just... things get easier.
Oh, do they really? Not over here for some odd reason.
Yeah, you've been busy.
Yeah, I've been real busy.
Because of the work you've taken on, stoking the vote-making machinery behind the popular song.
Well, That's right. You know what? I don't know, by the way, if you have yet been able to read my breaking report out of the Busby race down there in San Diego.
Indeed, and I just asked Senator Bowen about it a moment ago. Didn't get much new information, but she's going to investigate there. And, you know, she offered kind of general statement of concern.
Well, I heard just the end of that, and I did hear her mention one of the very key points here, which is that the machines down there in San Diego County are all Diebold machines. They use both optical scan and touchscreen. And as you know, we've talked many times about the vulnerabilities, the new vulnerabilities that have recently been discovered in both the touchscreen and optical scan systems made by Diebold, and that any kind of physical access to this machine, to these machines, in 2 minutes or less, no password necessary, allows them to be tampered with, hacked, and have their software completely replaced. I've just now learned that this morning that those Diebold voting machines were sent home with poll workers prior to the election. I had thought it was actually the night before, but I just heard from someone down in San Diego that was in on the training, and apparently, in some cases, she reports to me anyway, that they were sent home to poll workers as much as a week or two prior to the election. That I have not been able to confirm, but I have confirmed from the registrar's office that they are sent home with volunteer poll workers the night before the election.
Isn't this properly a function of the registrar of voters or whatever government entity in a given county is conducting the elections? That's their job.
It's their job. It's the job of the Secretary of State to assure this doesn't happen. His own report, Bruce McPherson's own report, said that there was more than 16 vulnerabilities found in these touchscreen and optical scan machines made by Diebold. And they said that there should be no physical access to those machines, and yet, apparently, it's perfectly legal in the state of California to send these damn things home with poll workers. We've got a race that's, little over 4,000 votes difference.
Right.
The two third-party candidates in the race yesterday, the minor party candidates, they had combined enough votes that would have made the difference and given Busby the victory.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely insane. And I'm glad that Bowen gets it, and she certainly does. And her winning, we've talked about it, her winning this November, it will be huge for those of us concerned with electoral integrity. But look, even Lou Dobbs is getting it. He's just spent his fourth show in a row going on and on about the threat of our American democracy to these electronic voting machines. When the hell is the rest of America going to get it? And how many elections do we have to see, what a squeaker, 3-point difference, as we had here, before the Democrats wake up and realize what the hell is going on here. There is no reason to have confidence in that election yesterday.
Well, and I like the way you framed it in the blog report today, because you say that we don't have confidence. We don't really know if it was a clean election, and we don't know that it was a clean election.
These
are very important questions. With that narrow margin, 4,700 votes, we need to dig in and get the answers.
There is no way to know, and the burden of proof needs to be on the people who run the elections that they have run an accurate election. They can't do it. I promise you, it cannot be done with the situation they have. There's a very narrow way that they can prove that the votes are accurate. I discussed it in my article, and the burden is upon the San Diego County Registrar of Voters down there, Michael Haas, to prove that election is legitimate. We're going to have election after election after election like this, Peter, until these guys realize what's going on and realize that we need to have verifiable voting.
Yeah. Well, Brad, I want to thank you for the update today, and we'll certainly visit with you on Friday at our regular time in the third hour. That's 5:20 Pacific time, and perhaps by then you'll know more about the Busby race, some of the other anomalies that occurred yesterday. Just quickly, Greg Palast is competing with Ann Coulter. They both have new books out, and yesterday the winner at Amazon was Greg Palast. You're one of the voices on his audiobook of his latest tome, and I just wanted to mention that and encourage people to buy Palast and shun Coulter. Anything you'd like to add?
I agree. Obviously, that is number one on the audio charts at Amazon because I'm reading on it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
right.
It. That must be it.
And I won't mention that to Ed Asner anytime soon.
Oh, don't tell him.
All right, Brad, we'll catch you Friday.
Thanks, brother.
All right, that's Brad Friedman. Read all about it at bradblog.com. Coming up next, Kyle Hentz returns to our program, one of the co-founders of the 9/11 Truth Movement. He'll be joining us to report on that conference in Chicago last weekend. Next hour, Dan Weintraub from the Sacramento Bee, John Garamendi, the next lieutenant governor, and maybe even Phil Angelides here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Monta Vista Wine and Spirits in Monterey has everything you need, from high-end liquor to the very best in fine wines. It's the real deal. Family-owned for over 40 years, John will give you one-on-one personal attention, just like family. Have a special request? Not a problem. Open every day from 9 to 9. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is located on Soledad Drive in Monta Vista Village, near the Del Monte Center. Look for Doug Huckleberry, who greets you at the door. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits wants you to please drink responsibly.
Join R.J. Moyer for his weekend show about college funding this Saturday at 10 a.m. on KRXA 540. R.J. Moyer brings to the microphone a unique perspective on the benefits of a college education, and he shares with you his knowledge on how to substantially reduce your out-of-pocket college expenses.
This is R.J. Moyer. Join me for About College Funding Saturday morning at 10 on KRXA 540, sponsored in part by The Potting Shed in Aptos.
Concerned about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
Hi, I'm Joan Kenley with Talking Matters. This Saturday at 3 on KRXA 540, you'll learn how Waldorf and Montessori schools benefit children. The care this kind of education brings to young students will touch your mind, body, heart, and soul. Jennifer Aniston was a Waldorf student and said it encouraged her career, creativity, and individualism. Jen Selby is also grateful. Montessori schools brought each of her children pride and confidence about their unique gifts. Our guests are wonderfully gifted teachers. Wendy Bashkoff from the East Bay Waldorf School and Paul McNeese, who's with the Montessori School in Kensington. Keep listening. We'll keep talking about things that matter. My shows are archived on joankenley.com. K-E-N-L-E-Y. Can Waldorf and Montessori schools benefit your child? Find out this Saturday at 3 on Talking Matters.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale reminding you to tune in to the greatest reality radio show ever.
It's Sheila.
Not now, Kate. Not now. Saturday evening, 6 to 7, we'll have the most interesting people.
But Sheila.
What is it?
You didn't mention my name.
Kate. Of course, Kate. We love you, Kate. That's Kate and Sheila Gale every Saturday evening, 6 to 7.
On Reality Radio.
AM 540.
On KRXA.
Oh, good, Kate. You done real good.
Oh, thanks.
We all have dreams, and dreams inspire possibilities in our lives. For many of us, one of our principal dreams is to live in harmony with our natural environment, to convert that sacred space we call home into a physical representation of our true nature.
Hi, I'm Peter Eichhorn, owner of Eichhorn Incorporated, a company dedicated to designing and creating of ecologically sound masonry projects to fulfill your particular desires and needs. Let me work with you to make your dreams real and your dwelling an enchanting, personalized home, one with nature, a true reflection of your inner desires. Make this new year special and let me assist you in your quest. I have a lifetime of experience. I'm honest. My prices are affordable and I love what I do. Call me at 393-1300. That's
393-1300. It is useless to resist us.
I am the irresistible Peter B. Collins, and you have found the Peter B. Collins Show. We are live on KRXA 540 Monterey, Salinas, Santa Cruz, and Carmel by the Sea. We are live on KGOE 1480, Eureka, Arcata, Humboldt County. And our program is heard in the nighttime in Sacramento, 1240 KSAC, Phoenix, Arizona, 1480 KPHX. I'm glad you're listening. Joining me now is Kyle Hentz, one of the early movers and shakers in the 9/11 truth movement. Welcome to our program today, Kyle. How are you?
I'm good. It's good to be back with you, Peter B.
Well, it's good to talk with you, and I'm delighted to have you on the program because, as you know, I have great interest in the issues that you work so diligently on. And I was pleased that the conference occurred in Chicago last weekend, and I was mildly pleased that the New York Times chose to cover it. But the manner in which they cover it is so insulting to those of us who have very serious and grave questions about what happened on 9/11/2001. And the article written by a guy named Alan Feuer, Feuer, F-E-U-E-R is the spelling, has the kind of dripping sarcasm that you would expect from coverage of a Star Trek convention, Kyle. That's the feel that I got from this.
Well, I think that's an apt description, an accurate one. But it's something that we've come to expect from the mainstream media. You know, it's just there's a stigma that they have helped create around anyone who stands up, voices some dissent, and calls into question any official story, any story given to us, fed to us from the government. If there's questions about it, and certainly if as soon as there's speculation, they're going to be very quick to label you a conspiracy theorist. And it was born in the 60s in the wake of the JFK assassination, and it's still living and is stronger than ever now in the wake of 9/11.
So let's just read one of these smarmy paragraphs here. Such red flags, that refers to a preceding paragraph about the put calls, the option calls on airline stocks in the days preceding 9/11. That's an issue you and I have discussed many times, and you've really dug in deep on it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this reporter wrote, such red flags, as they sometimes are called, were the meat and potatoes of the keynote speech Friday night by Alex Jones, who is the William Jennings Bryan of the 9/11 band. Mr. Jones, a syndicated radio host, is known for his larynx-tearing screeds against corruption, fiery, almost preacherly addresses in which he sweats, balls his fists, and often swerves from quoting Roman history to using foul language in a single breath. Mr. Jones set forth the central tenets of the 9/11 of 9/11 truth, that the military command that monitors aircraft, quote-unquote, stood down on the day of the attacks, that President Bush addressed children in a Florida classroom instead of being whisked off to the White House, that the hijackers, despite what the authorities say, were trained at American military bases, and that the towers did not collapse because of burning fuel and weakened steel, but because of a controlled demolition caused by preset bombs. So in framing it the way he did, the reporter deals with the issues raised in a factual way and dismisses them with the same hand.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. To be honest, I was actually surprised at some of the things he did include. And if I was to speculate, am I allowed to do that?
Yes.
If I was to speculate, I mean, I would think that it could be, knowing his editors or his editor well, and knowing perhaps their take on this, the body of evidence or this so-called 9/11 truth movement, this is the way he had to write it in order for the piece to get accepted. Now, I don't know that to be the facts.
No, but I think that's intelligent speculation.
It's possible. And the reason why I'm surprised, I can't remember reading another New York Times piece. Now, you know, perhaps you could correct me here, but where they put a URL in the body of the piece, in the print, the paper print edition. I'm not talking about the online edition. I'm talking about the print edition. He mentions Dr. Stephen Jones, who is the Brigham Young University professor, physicist, who has come up with a hypothesis. He's put it into a paper that it's now being peer-reviewed, that the towers are brought down by controlled demolition. He actually included the URL for that paper, and
yes,
I found
did.
That surprising, because there it is. You can go and check out this hypothesis. It's a physicist at Brigham Young University. There it is.
All right.
And
then on that basis, I'll suspend my judgment of Alan Feuer, because I do understand your point. And yes, if you have the same questions, Kyle, that I have and you have, and you read this article, at least there is reporting that people have asked those questions.
Absolutely. And the other thing is, I mean, you and I both know that there's all kinds of theories out there that have been put forward in the vacuum of the lack of information, secrecy, the obstruction, et cetera, et cetera. You know, everything from, holograms, there weren't any real planes, to, what have you. There are really some wild stuff out there, and certainly they were represented at the conference. And so he could have sought those folks out and reported on the wildest, wild-eyed conspiracy theories that are out there. Instead, he ended up citing three of which, the red flags, which I think are very common across the spectrum of those of us, wherever we fall on the political spectrum, who are saying, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. I'm talking about the stand down, the apparent stand down, the collapse of the air defenses, the put options, follow the money, right. And then, of course,
Building 7. Mm-hmm.
And so I give him credit there. Instead of saying completely sort of broad brushing the entire movement and dismissing it all and then sort of picking out the most zaniest or conspiracy theories or speculations, he doesn't.
He got loose change into the article too.
Well, yeah. I mean, here's a film that makes the case overtly that there was some insider involvement from inside the government in the attacks of 9/11, and it's a grassroots phenomena that I understand they're looking at 10 million downloads since they put that online.
Wow.
That's extraordinary.
Yeah.
And, it means that there's a lot of hunger out there for, to get to the bottom of it, for evidence, for people that are doing the homework, doing the hard work to get to the bottom of it.
We're talking with Kyle Hentz from 911citizenswatch.org. He attended this event in Chicago last weekend that we're talking about. And now let's move away from the New York Times report and ask you for maybe 2 minutes here, Kyle, on what you thought the key events were at this conference last weekend.
Well, a couple of highlights for me. One is the address by Dr. William Pepper, and that was Saturday night, and he gave the keynote address on Saturday night. Dr. William Pepper represented the King family, Martin Luther King's family, and also worked to exonerate James Earl Ray of the assassination of Dr. King.
Mm-hmm.
He is a barrister. He's licensed to practice law both in England and here in the U.S., he's worked for long-standing members of the Pakistani government, not the ISI, but the sort of career government people over there in Pakistan. And he's also working on a book about President Chavez down in Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
He's an author, again, a lawyer, and a lot of experience. I mean, he spent 27 years researching the assassination of Dr. King and spent over $1 million of his dollars of his own money, okay, to get to the bottom of it. His latest book is called An Act of State, in which he proves that the role of the U.S. government and organized crime in the assassination of Dr. King.
Mm-hmm.
He gave a very powerful speech, basically offering us his advice. He acknowledged the movement and its maturation over time, and basically encouraged us to put forward the evidence that is clear, that can be substantiated and backed up, and to avoid putting forward stuff that can't be.
Mm-hmm.
And avoid the excessive speculation. Build your case with the solid evidence, whether it's circumstantial, anecdotal, or forensic. Build your case step by step that way. Stick with the things that you can prove. make your case in that fashion. And he also warned us against disinformation campaigns, those that might want to infiltrate the movement. We already know the peace movement's been infiltrated by the government, and why should we think that it wouldn't be the same with those of us who are pushing to hold the government accountable and asking for further investigation and making the case that there's a wider circle of complicity in the attacks of September 11th. So mm-hmm. It was a very powerful presentation. We also saw a number of new films that are being been produced or in the process of being produced, one called Everybody's Gotta Learn Sometime, and a very powerful film by Aaron Russo, taking a very libertarian perspective on politics and the state of the world today, warnings about the danger of police state, examination of the Federal Reserve called America, From Freedom to Fascism. Very powerful film, one of the most powerful films I've ever seen in my life.
Hmm. And was it like a Trekkie convention, or were the people there generally, shall we say, you know, within limits and not out there on the fringe?
It was a mixed bag. You have a full spectrum. I think the majority of those there were very well informed. I sense less divisiveness, represented there than in previous events that I've attended. I think there's general consensus about what some of the major issues are. There's general understanding where there's, controversy or things a little bit more murky and less clear-cut. Universal feelings about what brought down the towers and how strong the evidence is that undermines the NIST study about Towers 1 and 2. Amazing research presented by Dr. Jones about thermite and showed actual video images of molten iron or molten metal pouring out of the side, the corner of one of the buildings. And then he proceeded to explain what could possibly account for this molten iron, the same molten iron and molten metal that stayed hot for weeks on end,
right,
deep down in the stories beneath the street level, beneath the two towers and beneath 7. It was very compelling stuff based on scientific research that he's doing, now, every day.
Let me take a break, and let's pick up there when we return with Kyle Hentz. If you have a question or comment about 9/11 truth, about the conference from last weekend, you can get on the line right now. Central Coast line's available. Local call at 831-899-5792. Or call me toll-free, 1-888-579-2540. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school, when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience, who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. 648-7060. I am Attorney Sean Mills.
Different ways. KRXA 540 looks at your traffic this afternoon, 448, and here's Metro Diane.
Start in Salinas, Highway 68 and Hitchcock Road. We had an earlier major injury accident. They had been blocking lanes. All the lanes have now been reopened. Two medical helicopters have landed and left the scene. Originally, it was a two-vehicle accident that also hit a telephone pole, so be aware, traffic is still heavily backed up in the area. Also have an injury accident in San Martin, southbound 101 after San Martin Avenue. Two vehicles blocking the left-hand lane there. This report is brought to you by Centrum Silver. Centrum Silver Multivitamins has essential nutrients, which emerging science suggests, along with a healthy diet, may help support heart health. I'm Diane with traffic on KRXA 540.
Thank you, Diane. We'll check back in about a half an hour. Every weekday morning, Casey's got your traffic during the Stephanie Miller Show, 6 to 9 a.m., right here on KRXA 540. And the Peter B. Collins Show continues. Coming up after the top of the hour, California's winner in the Lieutenant Governor primary yesterday, John Garamendi, will join us. I love that groove. It's Gorillaz with a Z on the end. And we continue with Kyle Hentz. We're talking about seeking the truth about 9/11/01 conference held in Chicago last weekend and some very interesting developments presented there. Kyle, give us a little more detail about Professor Stephen Jones from Brigham Young. He is a professor of physics, because physicist is so hard to say.
yeah, he's a professor of physics. He's a Mormon. Interesting story. I guess he was at a conference where a very popular speaker, motivational speaker, I believe, was giving a presentation. And she said during the course of her remarks something about, you know, we've yet to get to the truth of September, what happened on September 11th, and the room broke out in rousing applause, and he was like looking around and goes, what's this? I mean, he was like, this was news to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the skepticism, the rising skepticism in the country. And so we started looking into it. And
now, was this a talk before BYU students or a different audience?
I think it was at BYU, but I'm not sure. He did tell the story, but I can't remember what the venue was.
Yeah, you just don't expect that the average BYU student is into 9/11 theories.
No, and I wish I could answer that question, but I don't know exactly where it was. So this sort of set him on the trail, and when he examined the evidence and then later looked at the NIST report, the FEMA report, then the NIST report, NIST is the National Institute for Standards and Technology, he saw some major flaws in their explanations for what brought the towers down in terms of the temperature at which steel melts or weakens, and then also in the general mechanism of the collapse. Then he began to develop another thesis, and that led to his paper, which basically begins with the premise that what brought these towers down were some form of controlled demolition, and so he's built the case. He's then published the paper, and one of the most fascinating dimensions of his speech, of his talk to us, which is also one of the keynotes talks, I think it was Friday night, or maybe it actually followed Pepper. The whole schedule is up online at 911revealingthetruth.org.
Right.
But is that he was contacted by someone who represented himself as an engineer who had close contacts in government. He didn't give the man's name, but according to Dr. Pepper, they received a series of emails over several months in which he tried to convince him not to publish. And then at one point, when it seemed like he was going forward with it, he said, I have contacts at the Department of Homeland Security. I can get you money to do a different line of research, a different approach to research. And basically what he suggested he research was what would have brought the towers down, or which made the building weak, or vulnerable, was shoddy fireproofing. And that he suggested that he rent a helicopter, fire a missile from the helicopter into a building to see how the insulation in the building would respond. So this is an approach, and there were some questions about the insulation brought forward by Monica Gabriel and Sally Regenhardt of the Skyscraper Safety Campaign, but clearly this would have been a diversion from the thrust of his research and the hypothesis. It was an attempt at a bribe. Yeah. And I found that really revealing. Someone who claimed government contacts, close to government, U.S. government, was saying, listen, don't go there. Why don't you look here instead?
Yeah, come on over here. We'll get you a gig with General Dynamics.
Yeah. So, his explanations for, he showed the videos, of course, in slow motion. He slowed the evidence of explosions lower beneath the part of the building that was coming down.
Right, and let me just describe this, because it was so vivid in Loose Change, and that's where I've first seen it depicted.
Mm-hmm.
But the debris field that you can clearly see coming from the top of the building that starts to cascade down has not reached the lower points, mid and lower points of the building, where you can clearly see horizontal projectiles that would be consistent with an explosion inside the building at that level of the building. We also have the contemporaneous accounts of firefighters and other first responders who were there at the towers, who reported internal explosions after the planes had hit and before the towers had come down.
That's right. That's right. And and then he goes into describing something called thermite, which, I'm not a scientist, so I'm not going to remember all the details, but it's hard to ignite thermite. It's a mixture of several items, and the byproduct is molten steel. And it's used as a cutting agent to cut very quickly through metal. He showed videotapes of thermite placed on the top of a car, on the top of the hood of a car. It's electrically sparked, ignited, and then it starts to burn and spout, and there's all this yellow stuff, and then it turns into molten metal. Molten iron is the byproduct, and it literally went right through the car down into the earth. I mean, right down through the engine block in a matter of like less than a minute or something. It was extraordinary, and so this this is his hypothesis, that this thermite was placed in the building that cut these massive 47 central steel columns and had them come down. And because there was something apparently had set it off prematurely, according to his hypothesis, and this molten metal can be seen on video literally pouring out of the corner of the building. Absolutely extraordinary. And one other piece, important new information that I was not aware of, the NIST study has been delayed twice. Their findings about Building 7 have not been released. 1 and 2, yes. The Twin Towers, yes. Building 7, no.
Really?
They've delayed that twice, and he's learned that they've hired a company to do analysis of floors 46 through floors 8. And apparently are finding another company to do floors 1 or below, sub-level, sub-street level, up to floor through floor 7, and the top floor 47.
Well, why don't we just ask our friends from Dubai to handle the investigation, Kyle? Now, did Jim Fetzer make an appearance at this conference?
Yes. Jim Fetzer was there.
Of Minnesota in Duluth, and I've talked to him a couple of times. Pretty impressive guy.
Yeah, he's got a long history of research into the assassination of JFK, I believe, and I believe he's also written a book about Senator Wellstone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did he add anything of note that you caught?
I missed his presentation, so I can't speak to his participation there, but I do know that the Scholars for Truth are bringing together a lot of you know, a lot of scholars and scientists and professors that are bringing a sort of new level of scrutiny to all this material and all this, to what happened. And that,
Final question, Kyle, with about 20 seconds. The photos from the Pentagon, the government claims it proves a plane was flown into the building.
Hardly. I mean, it does nothing of the sort. I have no idea what that actually shows, but I certainly didn't see a Boeing or a 747 in what they released. So it certainly didn't put
Kyle, I'm out of time. Thank you for joining us today. Always a pleasure to talk with you. Keep
fighting.
Thank
you. Bye-bye.
We'll get the truth eventually. Kyle Hentz, 911citizenswatch.org. Coming up next, John Garamendi, candidate for lieutenant governor.
Hans Auto Repair in Seaside is Hans Down, the finest Volvo maintenance and repair shop in Monterey County. Owners Mike Brooks and Tracy Polacco are both factory trained in Volvo service and repair. They provide outstanding quality and great service at reasonable prices. They only work on Volvos, so you know that your Volvo will be in caring and skilled hands. Hans Auto Repair is at 384 Olympia Avenue in Seaside, or you can call Mike and Tracy at 583-9820. That's 583-9820.
Tom Hartman.
So today, Alberto Gonzalez comes out and says that he's been watching child porn. And he describes it extremely graphically. In fact, so graphically, frankly, I don't want to quote the Attorney General.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
It reminds me of Ed Meese. He created this Meese Commission on Pornography. And he came out and announced that he had watched over 800 hours of pornography. And they were convinced that watching pornography destroys people's minds. Then, Ed, why don't you check yourself into a hospital?
Tom Hartman on KRXA 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. The nation's top Marine pledges to get to the bottom of allegations that innocent civilians have been killed in Iraq.
The Marine Commandant has made his first public comments on charges American Marines committed atrocities against Iraqis.
I am gravely concerned.
General Michael Hagee says thorough investigations are underway, and if any Marine violated rules and regulations,
he will be held accountable regardless of grade or position.
As the man at the top, is the Commandant going to resign to acknowledge a failure of leadership?
I serve at the pledge. You're the president.
And General Hagee says he has not submitted his resignation. John Harchie, CBS News, Washington.
Investigations into the killing of civilians at Haditha and Hamdaniya could result in murder charges. By an overwhelming vote, the House has given final congressional approval to a crackdown on broadcast indecency. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports.
Since the uproar over a brief Super Bowl viewing of one of singer Janet Jackson's breasts, the FCC has become much more aggressive in defining things they think are indecent on radio and television and fining stations and networks for putting them on. When President Bush signs this bill, the fines the government can impose will increase tenfold to $325,000 per violation. This applies only to over-the-air radio and television, not cable or satellite channels.
The National Association of Broadcasters says it prefers responsible self-regulation for radio and TV stations. In the Senate today,
Mr. Nelson of Florida, no.
The noes prevailed in a procedural vote that stopped an anti-gay marriage amendment in its tracks. Supporters failed to muster a majority, much less the two-thirds vote required to change the Constitution. Cars and trucks are more reliable than ever before, but some are better than others. From Detroit, WWJ Radio's Jeff Gilbert has the latest J.D. Power initial quality rankings.
Porsche, Lexus, and Hyundai took the top three slots in J.D. Power's study of initial quality of vehicles. Buick, which has always done well, fell, but J.D. Power's director of quality, Joe Ivers, says that may not be bad because new Buicks have been attracting younger customers.
Any time a franchise succeeds in moving down market to younger customers, they're generally moving to a more tough customer.
Car buyers criticize German luxury brands for using too much technology to handle simple tasks. Jeff Gilbert, CBS News, Detroit.
The food must have been good when the Republican Senate caucus met for lunch yesterday. Today, in an angry letter to Dick Cheney, Judiciary Chairman Arlen Specter accuses the Vice President of lobbying Republican members of the committee to influence its investigation of the government's domestic surveillance program. Specter complains that Cheney never consulted him. He writes, "This is especially perplexing since we both attended the lunch yesterday, and I walked directly in front of you on at least two occasions, en route from the buffet to my table." On Wall Street today, the Dow lost 71 points, the Nasdaq down 10. This is CBS News.
The following is a message from Pfizer.
This is Dr. Drew Pinsky. Some of you may know me as Dr. Drew. Today's topic is men's sexual health, more specifically, performance problems. And we've got a brave guy on the line.
I don't know why I'm even calling, because it's not really an issue. It only happens every once in a while, like when I'm tired or stressed out, a little under the weather.
Just to guess, but are we talking about erectile dysfunction?
Oh, no, not ED. Just a very occasional little glitch. Yeah, I'd call it an erectile glitch.
Well, a lot of guys don't realize it, but ED may not happen all the time. It can be unpredictable.
Now you mention it, I never know when it's going to happen.
And that's something you want to live with?
Good, fine. I'll talk to my doctor.
To learn more about ED and how to treat it, talk to your doctor or visit justasktoday.com.
The American bald eagle has made such a comeback in Florida that today state wildlife commissioners voted to take it off the endangered list. And as CBS News correspondent Peter King reports, the manatee has been upgraded from endangered to threatened.
Various estimates say there are about 3,300 manatees left in Florida. Judith Valley of the Save the Manatee Club says small groups of the cuddly-looking sea cows are repopulating.
But the two smaller populations comprise only 16% of the entire population. The other 84% is not doing well.
And activists fear a change will make it easier to repeal environmental and boating laws protecting manatees. Fish and Wildlife spokesman Henry Cabbage says a change in status doesn't mean a change in the state's commitment.
It's based on what the animal needs, not where it is on the list.
Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
No matter what state authorities do, manatees and eagles are still protected by federal law, including the Endangered Species Act. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
In the search for ways to improve health care, we'd like to add another solution. I-beams. That's right, I-beams. A member of the American Institute of Architects can use I-beams to create spaces that enhance healing by easing a patient's mind, sharpening a surgeon's skill, softening a nurse's touch. Not bad for a hunk of iron. Get an AIA architect involved early. You'll feel much better. AIA. Good design makes a difference. Visit AIA.org.
At Chevy, we've been challenging Americans to check out our cars and trucks versus the competition, and they've been finding out the facts. Did you know that 9 out of 10 cars Chevy sells get an EPA estimated 30 highway miles to the gallon or better? Like Cobalt LS, with an EPA estimated 34 highway miles per gallon with manual transmission. Claim based on RL Book and Company CYE05 passenger car total registrations in the U.S. Compare Chevy head-to-head. Go to Edmunds.com. Chevy, America's number one brand, America's number one value.
Six minutes after the hour, you're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. Coming up shortly, John Garamendi, who won the primary yesterday in the Democratic race for lieutenant governor, the nomination. He'll be with us. And we're dialing desperately to track down Phil Angelides. We'll see if it happens this hour. Joining us right now, Dan Weintraub from the Sacramento Bee, political reporter and chief blogger on politics. And Dan, I just deduced that you got about 5 hours sleep last night.
I'm not sure it was that much, Peter, but good guess.
In between postings, 12:18 is when you signed off accepting that Steve Wesley had lost. And then 5:39 is when you posted again.
Okay. And I didn't sleep that entire time, believe it or not.
Really?
No.
Well, you must be running on overdrive right now.
I'm ready to crash.
Okay. Well, first up, I did a little calculation, and I figure that Steve Wesley spent about $40 per vote to lose the primary yesterday.
Too. Worth every penny of it, too.
You think so?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Give us your analysis. You write here, Wesley peaked too soon. That was something that a high school teacher warned me about.
Well, he came out of the gate in the primary quickly, and while Angelides was short of money, Wesley went on the air with some nice ads, kind of introducing himself, and made a good first impression. But he never really sealed the deal. I think I also said the voters were dating him but not saw, fresh face, high-tech connections, a little bit of experience in government, and moderate views, didn't scare anybody. And they said, oh, this guy'd be pretty good. He'd be a good challenger to the governor.
Mm-hmm.
But he never followed it up. He never really laid out any kind of a vision for where he wanted to go. He never really had any serious ideas for people to chew on. And so he just kind of sat there treading water, and Angelides came back and passed him.
One of the people surprised by the outcome is Willie Brown, the former Speaker of the Assembly, Mayor of San Francisco. At a lunch I was at about 8 weeks ago, he said that his theory was that Wesley, as a relatively fresh face, was going to be able to prevail in this cycle, and he also credited him for his personal fortune. And presuming that he would pump the money in, he thought Wesley would pull this off.
Yeah, well, Democrats didn't go for the fresh face. They went for a little more familiar face and one who shared their ideology more than Wesley does. I mean, Wesley's kind of a centrist between the parties, not very far really from where Arnold Schwarzenegger is, whereas Angelides made it very clear that he is strongly in favor of raising taxes on the wealthy and on big business, and pouring that money into schools and health care and other government programs, and amping up the state's regulation of the business community. So he was very strong in those views. It was a little bit risky. He's going to have to defend them now in the general election, but he stood for something, and you can't beat something with nothing.
Yeah. And when you look at Steve Wesley, do you think he's washed up?
I could imagine him coming back and running for another office. The most natural one would be the U.S. Senate, but there's not going to be an opening in the U.S. Senate for quite some time. I think Dianne Feinstein is going to be reelected this year. Barbara Boxer's not going anywhere. So other than that, I guess he could run for Congress or another statewide job, but he's got a couple hundred million dollars in the bank still. He might just sit back and enjoy life for a while.
Well, he seems so tightly wound, that doesn't seem to be an option for him.
Yeah, he could dive back into business. He could become a venture capitalist. He could be involved in national Democratic politics as a fundraiser or supporting causes the way, say, George Soros has done. There's lots of things that a guy like that can do.
Mm-hmm.
He's a smart guy. Good
yeah,
job.
He is. We're talking with Dan Weintraub from the Sacramento Bee. Let's jump around a little bit, Dan. District 50, the important race between Francine Busby and Brian Bilbray. This, of course, the seat vacated by the convicted and corrupt Duke Cunningham. The Republicans pumped $4.5 million into the Bilbray race, and they won by 4,700 votes, about three percentage points. I'm not really surprised by that. But I'm actually surprised that Busby got as close to victory as she did.
Well, I think she actually had a chance to pull that off. But a few weeks ago, the number one issue in that race changed from the so-called culture of corruption and the problems the Republicans have been having in Congress to illegal immigration. I mean, I've lived in that district. It is not very far from the border, but it's also right in the middle of an agricultural area in northern San Diego County. And there's a heavy presence of immigrants, and particularly illegal immigrants, throughout the district. And that became the number one issue. And the people there were strongly in favor of a very tough stand on that issue. And it was clear that Bilbray was going to be the person who catered to that view more closely. And I think once that became the issue, Busby was in trouble and ultimately could not break through.
Bilbray is a former congressman who spent the last 4 or 5 years as a lobbyist. And am I correct that he got his ballot designation as immigration consultant?
I could not swear by that. I didn't see the ballot they were using down there. But,
okay. I think it is something like that.
That and, that doesn't sound like one that would be all that popular, actually. But yeah, that became the issue, and then I think you may have talked about Ms. Busby toward the end of the campaign said something sort of incoherent about you don't need papers to vote, speaking to a Spanish-speaking person at a rally or forum of some sort. Nobody really knew what exactly she meant, but then she tried to explain herself and kind of dug in deeper, and the whole thing kind of spun out of her control and probably nailed down the result of Bill Bray as much as anything.
Now, at your blog, you have a post that I haven't had time to read, Newt on the 50th, and reporter Joe Justin apparently got a hold of Newtie. What is the what's the sense?
Actually, Joe Justin is actually a consultant who blogs at something called the Flash Report, which is a Republican blog fest run by another former consultant out of Orange County. But anyway,
okay.
He had a thing from Gingrich essentially saying that if Republicans are strong on issues like immigration and don't basically sort of divorce themselves from their problems in Washington and run on local issues, it's all politics is local, which is ironic because Gingrich was the author of the Contract with America, which nationalized the elections in 1994
right.
on behalf of the Republicans. But now he seems to be saying, figure out what's important to your voters and hammer on it, whether it's immigration or maybe the deficit or something else, and essentially separate yourself from the problems the party is having in Washington and the feelings about the president, and you can do just fine.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dan Weintraub, in the statewide constitutional offices, the only real surprise to me, at least on the Democratic side, was the margin of victory in the dueling Debras. The polling showed that Ortiz and Bowen were really statistically tied, and Bowen beat Ortiz 3-1.
Yeah, I don't think that polling is all that reliable in those down-ballot races, but certainly polling or no polling, that result was a surprise. Democrats historically, or at least lately, have been happy to nominate folks of different ethnicities. And in fact, some people think that it's an advantage to be an Hispanic in the Democratic Party now.
Mm-hmm.
But Ortiz was just shellacked by Bowen, and it's a mystery. You just don't know. Most voters know nothing about these candidates.
Right.
So it'd be wonderful to be able to tell how they made that decision and why that broke the way it did. There was really nothing in the campaign that would suggest it, and no dramatic events. It just broke that way. I guess more people like Deborah spelled D-E-B-R-A than D-E-B-O-R-A-H.
And Dan Weintraub, finally, to the San Benito County effect, you also mused about Imperial County. Let's go to San Benito first.
Don't want to mess with that other one. It's nuts. San Benito County once again did pick the winner in the top of the ticket race, but it was just by a hair and not as accurately as it has in the past. I think
9/10 of a point.
44% for Angelitas, and he got, 48% statewide.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, the numbers are so tiny. I think if you moved about 25 voters into Angelitas' camp, he probably would have had 48%. So they're still reliable, but there's a chink in the San Benito armor, and they're going to have to prove themselves again in the general election.
Imperial County?
Imperial County, they are the opposite of San Benito County. They are not the bellwether county, at least unless they're leading us of what the state's going to look like 20 years from now or something.
Yeah, they picked Liz Figueroa, who plays third in the lieutenant governor's 54% race.
54% for Figueroa. I don't think she got more than 15% anywhere else.
Even in her home turf, yeah.
Yeah. I think the Democratic candidates combined got 70%, the two major candidates for governor, and the also-rans got 30% in that county. The governor got something like 80%, and they also ran in the Republican primary, picked up the rest. Very disenchanted, sort of, I don't know if it's Ross Perot land or
mm-hmm.
the heavily Hispanic influence down there.
Yeah.
Of course, Maldonado finished first there. Rocky Delgadillo beat Jerry Brown there. You mentioned Liz Figueroa and Deborah Ortiz flipped the margin on Deborah Bowen. So
we do see a trend there.
Panic thing.
Dan, thanks a lot for your work, and get some sleep, will you?
I will.
And you can take tomorrow off. I give you permission.
I'm going to be on the bus with the governor.
Oh, God, you lucky guy.
Yeah.
Dan Weintraub at the Sacramento Bee, thanks for joining us today. Coming up next, John Garamendi, who was successful in the lieutenant governor primary yesterday, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Do you wish your dentist listened to you?
Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
I'm Chuck Mackley, owner of Executive Financial Services. I can get you up to 12% interest on your investment on first and second trust deeds secured by real property. Don't settle for 3 to 5% on your money. Call me today at 443-7277. Your investment will be protected by the equity in the property and title insurance. Put your hard-earned money to work. Call Executive Financial Services at 443-7277 and ask for Chuck Mackley.
Come on in, and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything so tasty, you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a pillar affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus too. A side of couscous and a baba ghanoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery.
MPG. For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Join R.J. Moyer for his weekend show about college funding this Saturday at 10 a.m. on KRXA 540. R.J. Moyer brings to the microphone a unique perspective on the benefits of a college education, and he shares with you his knowledge on how to substantially reduce your out-of-pocket college expenses.
This is R.J. Moyer. Join me for About College Funding Saturday morning at 10 on KRXA 540, sponsored in part by The Potting Shed in Aptos.
KRXA 540 with a look at your traffic. Here's Metro Diane.
We'll give you an accident on the major injury accident in Salinas. Highway 68 at Hitchcock Road. Westbound traffic is still being diverted into a turn lane there while crews wrap up an investigation. So definitely expect delays throughout the area there. Also in Salinas, northbound 101 before Chular Road. Keep your eyes open for pieces of plastic in the roadway. Reportedly about 3 pieces there. In Gilroy, southbound 101 before Maston Avenue, we have a 3-vehicle accident. And in San Martin, southbound 101 after San Martin Avenue, we have a 2-vehicle injury accident in the Center Divide. This report is brought to you by Realty World. Looking for your dream home or second home? Look to your local Realty World broker for integrity, service, experience. Realty World, where the right agent makes all the difference in the world. RealtyWorldNCA.com. I'm Diane with traffic on KRXA 540.
Twenty-two minutes past the hour, we all survived the California primary yesterday. And here's a guy who came out on top. He's currently the insurance commissioner, and now he's the Democratic nominee for Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi. Hello, John.
Hello, Peter B. How are you?
Well, I'm feeling good for you. Congratulations.
Well, I'm feeling good, too. It's good to win. It's good to have a good campaign out of the way. And, it, you know, you go across the state and you say, you know, this is a fabulous state. And to be able to talk about the issues and get out there and meet people and then come back knowing that you have a much better understanding of what's going on in California, that's when the campaign is good.
Yeah. And it got a little ugly in there. You had the insurance company, I'm sorry, the insurance industry
trying to penalize you for your functioning as insurance commissioner in this current race, and they spent over $2 million on negative mailers and other hits on you. You also had tough competition from two women, Jackie Speer, a state senator who distinguished herself on many fronts, and Liz Figueroa, who didn't do nearly as well as many people had suspected. I think she was banking on her status as a leading Latino, Latina, to attract a lot of voters statewide. But with the exception of Imperial County, we were just talking with Dan Weintraub about that, she did not fare so well.
Well, I really had two very well-established and very capable opponents. Both of them had served long in the Senate, and both had done a very, very good job in the Senate. The advantage that I had was that I had been elected twice statewide to two different terms as insurance commissioner, and used that job to really build the best consumer protection agency in America. And the public recognized that. And what I found so satisfying was that the insurance industry, after attempting to bribe me, carried out their threat that they would do a $2.5 million hit on me in the 3 weeks running up to the election. It didn't work for them, and that's so critically important, not just for my election, which, you know, I appreciate personally, but for the next commissioner, who, if they had succeeded, the next commissioner would have to be constantly looking over their shoulder, fearful that the industry was going to unload on them. And that would simply chill all of their efforts to protect consumers. So it was really, really important in those areas where the industry focused. It didn't work. And the way I see it is that the $2.5 million they spent against me, they should have spent paying their claims quick and fully.
And John Garamendi, do you have any inkling that either of your Democratic opponents got special funding from the insurance industry as a way to combat you?
I don't. I have no knowledge of that. I don't think that happened. You know, clearly, both opponents, and I think Jackie, Senator Speer more than Senator Figueroa, benefited from it. But in the end, it really didn't matter because the public, it appears to me, and I don't want to overstate this, but it appears to me that the public really knew who I was and appreciated the work that I had done over these many, many years.
John, we did a calculation that Steve Wesley spent approximately $40 per vote to lose in the primary yesterday. What did it cost you to win? You got 871,000 votes, so give us a round number on how much you spent.
In money that we actually spent on television and advertising, it was right around a million.
Uh-huh.
Maybe another 100,000 more. Haven't I added it all up? There were, of course, expenses over the course of the 2 years, but those are principally administrative expenses and fundraising expenses. But in communication, it was just maybe 1.1, 1.2 million maximum.
Uh-huh.
And we were outspent. Senator Speer, we know, spent very close to 3 million.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Figueroa was another half million. Then you add up what was the insurance industry. So, I don't know, $5 million spent on the other side, and
mm-hmm.
I guess that's what somebody asked me today. They said, what does all this mean? I said, what it means is that each one of us in elected office really must do the very best we can every day that we're there to deal with the real problems that people have. And if we do that, it's politically beneficial as well as good for the public. And
yeah.
I think that's what happened here.
Good government can make for good politics. Now, you face Tom McClintock, who is one of the most conservative Republicans in the state, this November. What's your strategy for defeating him?
Well, the first and most basic part of the strategy is that Tom McClintock is indeed stuck on the right-wing wall. For example, the infrastructure bonds didn't even vote for Schwarzenegger's infrastructure bonds. I think out of four he voted for. His environmental record is the worst in the state Senate. I mean, it's just terrible. He's all for oil drilling off the coast. He thinks that development ought to take place everywhere, and we ought to fill in every wetland. And his view on public education is archaic. He simply has no use for public education, thinks it ought to be defunded, disappeared, and then he continually trashes the one person that is responsible for educating, which is the teacher. Instead of helping the teacher, he's opposed most everything that we've tried to do to help teachers in the classroom. So there's just a real stark difference here.
Mm-hmm. Well, John, again, congratulations to you, and I'm glad that you survived the assault from the insurance industry, and I look forward to talking with you further as we get closer to November.
We're looking forward to it also, and we'll be pointing out these differences between my view, for example, on choice and he's anti-choice. So
and the cell phone cut him off. Thank you, John Garamendi, and congratulations to you. Coming up next, we're going to go to the phones and take your calls. Join me, 831-899-5792 or toll-free, 888-579-2540. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and fun in the Monterey Bay area. I interview authors, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make Monterey and our region such a delicious slice of our tasty planet. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for tasty new shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
Tired of stale syndicated right-wing blowhards?
And we are thrilled and honored to have with us Donald Rumsfeld.
You got a bunch of dopey kids watching these shows. Oh, Riley!
Here on KRXA 540, you can hear a fresh local liberal blowhard.
And another thing, Coach, you could strip me naked, stake me to an anthill, pour honey all over me, and I still wouldn't vote for a Republican.
Hal on the show every morning from 9 to 10, only on KRXA 540. Down in
Childhood Matters, the show for parents and everyone who cares about our kids.
The doctor is in. Do you have questions about your child's health? I'm Nurse Rona. Join me and Dr. Nora Garcia-Zepeda to discuss issues from summer colds, immunizations, and sunscreen. Enjoy your children this summer and keep them healthy and safe.
Childhood Matters, this Sunday morning at 9 on KRXA 540. Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Would you like to be part of a conversation that might not only inspire your golf game, but have you thinking differently about sports, about learning, and about performance? Join golf pro and best-selling author Fred Shoemaker on KRXA 540 Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. for Extraordinary Golf, some uncommon conversations about golf, and maybe even a little beyond golf. Extraordinary Golf, Saturday mornings on KRXA 540 at 8 a.m.
and the Peter B. Collins Show brings you our daily free speech zone. Lines are open, and you can talk about any issue from any viewpoint from anywhere within the sound of my voice. 831-899-5792 or toll free 888-579-2540. Here's the real target.
Who can take California?
Who can take California?
Set it on its ear.
Set it on its ear.
Stop it in its tracks and take it out of gear. The girly man.
The girly man.
The girly man can.
The girly man can.
The girly man can. Cause he messes with my mind and makes my world a pain in the... You know what? Who can take a budget?
Who can take a budget?
Put it all askew. Bow to special interests and a lobbyist or two. The girly man.
The girly man.
The girly man can.
Yes, Bill Angelides defeated Steve Wesley in the Democratic primary, and his honor is he gets to take on the governor. And that will not be easy. And I want to hear your thoughts at this point in time, the 7th of June, 2006, looking forward to this November's general election. Do you believe that Phil Angelides can beat Arnold Schwarzenegger? Now, it's interesting because viscerally, I believe that Phil Angelides is a much tougher opponent for Governor Schwarzenegger. However, the polls as of last week reflected the opposite, that Steve Wesley had a 3 or 4 point advantage as a Democrat taking on Schwarzenegger. In the polls, in those matchups, I don't believe either Wesley or Angelides was on track to beat Schwarzenegger. But Wesley was polling stronger than Angelides. And my reason is that I don't think there'll be more than one debate. Now, I don't see that the Democratic candidate is really going to be able to confront Schwarzenegger very often. Arnold's going to run around the state in his little tour jackets with the bus and the light show and all of those special effects that he loves from Hollywood. And I believe that Angelides is more engaging, more politically adept, and I think that he will find ways to really contrast himself with Schwarzenegger in ways that Wesley could not. So I'm encouraged, but by no means do I consider it a lock. I think Schwarzenegger is formidable. His name ID, the way he has recovered in some respects from his serious blunders of 2005, particularly with the independent voters in the state. The polls show that he has recovered some of the ground that he coughed up last year. And by championing the infrastructure bonds, by talking up an increase in the minimum wage, Schwarzenegger has moderated his stance and probably does appeal to a broader cross-section of Californians than he did just a year ago. So I'd like to hear your ideas about this matchup between Angelides and Schwarzenegger, the Greek versus the Austrian, and let me know what your thoughts are about the prospects here over the next few months and how you think it'll turn out in November. Now, the lines are available, and my numbers are this, 831-899-5792, or toll-free at 1-888-579-2540. And I'd like to hear from our man Jake in Arcata today. We've given Jake a pass because he was running for the Democratic Central Committee up there, and he hasn't called in for a week or 10 days, and we figure he's just been busy campaigning, probably pushed some homeless guy off a street corner so he could hold up a sign there and panhandle for votes. So, Jake, if you're out there, I want to hear from you. I want to find out what the outcome of your race was and also get your thoughts on this question. 831-899-5792 or toll-free at 1-888-579-2540. Now, many of you are aware that I worked for Pete McCloskey during this past few weeks, helping his campaign as he took on a very difficult challenge and came up short. He took on Richard Pombo, who sits in the 11th District, is an incumbent who is now on his way to his 8th term after saying he'd only serve 3 or maybe a couple of more. And Pombo, in my view, is the poster child for the corruption of one-party leadership in Washington. He's a delay boy, he's an Abramoff boy, and it is quite disappointing to me that 62% of Republicans in that district either ignored the facts about Pombo or consider them beneficial. He may be a corrupt redneck, but he's our corrupt redneck, might be the sentiment expressed by voters who looked at Pete McCloskey, and maybe they thought he was too old. He's 78 years old. But I think he articulated a very important message and was a vehicle for people to say no to Pombo. But it didn't happen that way. Likewise, it was disappointing in, I think it's District 36, where Marcy Winograd, a Democrat, took on the conservative Democrat Jane Harmon, and the margin was strikingly similar to the Pombo-McCloskey race, 62% for Harmon and mid-30s, I think 32 or 34% for Marcy Winograd. And this, to me, is a disappointing bellwether for the rest of the nation. Because if Democrats couldn't overcome the slime, the $4.5 million that the GOP put behind Bill Bray, and couldn't communicate and connect with voters in San Diego about the need for change, then I'm not optimistic that the rest of the nation will see that need for change. It was brought into high contrast with the guilty pleas and the sentencing of Duke Cunningham. And when you see how he abused his position, how he accepted bribes, gratuities, Rolls Royces, all kinds of stuff, in exchange for giving up his vote or misusing it, why is it that people in San Diego, where local scandals involving mostly Republicans have dominated the news for the last 2 years, how can they send Bill Bray to Washington instead of Busby? Bill Bray was an okay congressman, and then he became a lobbyist. And while I'm not saying he has committed any kind of illegal acts as a lobbyist, shouldn't the voters of San Diego say, gosh, do we want a lobbyist to replace the corrupt guy who responded to the blandishments of lobbyists? Well, I guess if you sling enough mud and $4.5 million worth of campaign advertising, the answer, unfortunately, is yes. So I'd like to know what your thoughts are about yesterday's elections, any campaign, any issue that you want to talk about, bring it forward. And also yesterday, I want to thank Ed and Billy, our regular listeners, who tipped me off to what had happened on KGO on Monday night. I helped Pete McCloskey, as you know, produce a program where he conducted a town hall meeting on the radio and took calls from listeners. And we used his prerogatives as a federal candidate under federal law to buy an hour of time on KGO, the powerful station in San Francisco. And John Rothman, whom I know, was sitting in for Gene Burns and followed the political broadcast sponsored by McCloskey. And frankly, he ripped us to shreds. He felt that it was unfair, that we didn't properly disclose that it was a paid program, and things of that sort. But in between his bluster, he offered a number of compliments about the show itself, about the concept of, you know, using the prerogative of a candidate for Congress to communicate with voters in this manner. And so if you had any reaction to that, I don't know how many people who tune into this program actually listened to those exchanges the other night, but you're welcome to talk about that too. 831-899-5792 or toll-free 888-579-2540. Couple of items in the news. I didn't see this one coming. And so I was a little surprised to hear that it's a fait accompli. The governor of Louisiana, Kathleen Blanco, who came to prominence nationally during the post-Katrina era, signed into law a strict ban on abortion in Louisiana that would permit abortion only in the case where a woman's life was threatened by pregnancy. And, of course, once again, this is an anti-abortion bill that was initially sponsored by a Democrat, in this case, Senator Ben Nevers of Bogalusa. And this, to me, is another very serious warning about the tilt to the right of the U.S. Supreme Court, and in particular, the nominations of Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Alito. And these legislatures are emboldened now. They believe that with these conservative courts, that they will prevail and overturn Roe versus Wade. Mr. Bogalusa himself says, I had a strong belief that we could finally protect the innocent life of an unborn child. This is about the U.S. Constitution granting every person the right to life. And another quote here, I'm looking for one, that there's one that talked about the loosening up of the Supreme Court and its new rightward tilt, and that this creates an environment where these conservative right-to-lifers hope that the court is going to agree with them. So I simply want you to be aware of this, because the forces of right-wing morality are trying to impose their views on every American citizen. And I think that this is a step into what I call the new dark ages. And to see Louisiana join South Dakota in criminalizing abortion, this is, you know, just another significant step in a loss of rights, a loss of freedom in this country. And of course, it's never described that way. It's described as a good thing, as, you know, preserving life, protecting life. And of course, those are misleading euphemisms that are used to spin the issue and, in my view, block actual clear thinking about it. We're going to take a break and return here. The Free Speech Zone is available to you. 1-831-899-5792. That's the Central Coast. Or 1-888-579-2540. That's the toll-free line. The circuits are available. Your free speech rights are still in full effect, so why don't you use them? And Jake, I know you're out there. I want to hear from you. 888-579-2540 puts you through to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school, when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
KRXA 540 here on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. And ordinarily we bring you a traffic report at this time, but our Metro Diane is tied up and, well, not actually tied up. She's busy. So I'll simply remind you that you can get traffic every weekday morning with Casey on the Stephanie Miller Show between 6 and 9 a.m. And then Casey hangs around to do the local show with Hal and Casey on the show every weekday from 9 to 10 a.m. So stay tuned to KRXA right after 6 o'clock. We've got Barry Lynn in Culture Shocks, followed by Lionel tonight from 7 to 10. That's all ahead right here on KRXA 540. Let's just hum the rest of the music to ourselves. The Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. We're in the free speech zone where you can call with a comment on any issue from any viewpoint. Lines open for you right now. Central Coast, 899-5792 and the 831 area code. That's 899-KRXA for our flagship station in Monterey. And you can call me toll-free, 888-579-2540. That's 888-579-2540. Haven't mentioned this in a while. You can email me, Peter, at peterbcollins.com. And peterbcollins.com is the website with a little photo, a little biography, and also links to our daily live stream and our archives, podcasts, and all that stuff. So peterbcollins.com is the place where you can find it. I was just curious, and if you're looking for any results from yesterday's primary, the most reliable, easiest website is the one run by the often missing in action Secretary of State Bruce McPherson. And you just go to ss.ca.gov, that's Secretary of State, ss.ca.gov, and you can find the results. 100% of the precincts are in virtually every area. And here's another disappointment for me. Last week and on a couple of other occasions, we brought Lisa Ray onto the program. She's a Democratic challenger. She wanted to run against John Doolittle in District 4, but she placed second yesterday in the primary. The winner was Charlie Brown, who up until recently was a Republican and switched parties to join the fray. He will be the opponent of John Doolittle this fall, and I certainly wish him well. But I would have preferred to see Lisa Ray take on that challenge. And that's just one of those things that you got to live with. To the phones we go, and Forrest in Salinas. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show. Hi, Forrest.
Hello, Peter B. How are you today?
Not too bad.
I was just driving along here and tuned into your show and, you know, heard you use the phrase, you know, discussing the alleged tilt to the right of the court, which, frankly, you know, we haven't really yet seen the case to prove or disprove that theory, that, you know, the people that are not or that are against the abortion side of the argument, using the term right to life as a euphemism for removing rights. I'm not a woman, so obviously, and since you aren't either, obviously our discussion of this subject has a somewhat less than honest cast to it, since we'll never be faced with that choice. But I do think that right to life is as much of a euphemism for I don't want my life impacted by a pregnancy as saying that, freedom of choice is as much of a euphemism as right to life. Because the fact of the matter is that, except in cases of rape and incest, there is really nobody sticking up for the child. And it's not really a walnut. You know, if we start talking about the usual tests of viability, well, a baby will die 1 week after birth just as surely as it will die 1 week before birth. And so for myself, I just find both arguments troubling because they really don't take into account the baby.
All right. Well, I understand your personal philosophy and your viewpoint there, and I fully respect it, and you're entitled to it. My approach to the issue, and I do not feel ill-equipped simply because I'm a male, to discuss the legal issues and what the policy, in my view, should be. And it is a complicated issue. It is difficult for people of different views, philosophies, and faiths to agree on when a fetus is viable and at what point it really takes on human form. And we have not resolved that that debate, and I don't think that we ever will as long as we remain humans. I think that it takes a superhuman or a supreme being of some sort to make judgments of a lasting nature. But on a practical level, it's fairly simple for me, Forrest, and that is that I don't believe that anyone has the right to impose their moral views about life, about the viability of a pregnancy, on someone other than themselves. No one is suggesting that our laws require anyone ever to have an abortion. What the law permits is a woman to make a choice to have an abortion. And I think that's a very personal choice, and it boils down to, again, practical issues, that when it was against the law, it occurred anyway. And so I'm a practical person who says, rather than attempt to outlaw something that will not be outlawed, I would prefer to be realistic and say, I don't want to promote abortion. I don't think that, in my own value system, that it is overall a good thing. But I strongly and firmly believe that it's not my right to impose a view on anyone else. And that's what's occurring in Louisiana. That's what's occurring in South Dakota. And I don't agree with you about the Supreme Court. I think it's pretty easy to read the rightward tilt and the way the two newest justices will vote on abortion rights down the line.
Well, again, we'd have to go look at case decisions to really make that judgment. But I take your stand, and again, as I say, we can draw all sorts of theoretical limits or timelines, but when is a fetus not human? You know, because if we use any objective test of sustainability, then you could also say that people, when they're very, very old and completely dependent upon someone to be a caregiver, that caregiver could decide for their own reasons and for their own advantages and not in an objective sense to decide that it's really too much trouble. Now, I agree with you wholeheartedly that from a pragmatic and a practical standpoint, this is not something that governments really can do one way or the other. I guess what I'd like to see on both sides is this, you know, is, shall we say, toning down of the rhetoric, because, for example, this week, because of the, you know, decision by the Senate to preempt the Right to Life Amendment, it has been rightly, I think, castigated as an attempt to rally the base. But I would also
Forrest, I think you're confusing right to life with the defense of marriage, the anti-gay.
Oh, I'm sorry, the anti-gay. You're right.
Yeah, that's their morality play of the week, or maybe year.
And exactly so. And again, as a semi-conservative, semi-liberal, I recognize it. But I would also point out that, you know, the abortion rights issue has been just as, shall we say, effectively used probably the base on the other side. So it is sad, but I suppose human nature, that politicians will use whatever tools that they feel are in their arsenal to advance, frankly, their own advancement.
Well, Forrest, I would just make a slight difference with what you just said, in that I believe that the left has grown tired of being called to the ramparts over the right, you know, the right of choice. And what we saw, particularly, you know, in comparing the hearings of Roberts and Alito, the Democratic leaders are finding it more and more difficult to rally their base around the choice issue. And I really thought that the Alito confirmation was the critical battle. And I didn't see women's groups or general left organizations rallying and fighting at the level that I had expected. So I think there has, you know, we've gotten a level of People who are simply accepting the status quo and assuming it will never change, and they take it for granted. And so I feel that the advantage at the moment is on the right, and that they are able to rally their base with fears of, unlimited abortion on demand and unlimited same-sex marriage on demand promoted by activist judges. Clearly, those wedge issues are benefiting the right much more than the left right now, and I do not dispute that the left has used abortion as a wedge issue, which is one of your initial points. Thanks for joining me, Forrest. Call me again. I'd love to talk with you further. Time for me to go. Trigger's here, and I got to saddle up. We'll be back at you tomorrow, same time, same stations.
Happy trails to you until we meet again.
Hi, this is Ed Schultz, America's number one progressive talker. Join me every weekday from noon to 3 here on KRXA 540. I'm based in Fargo, North Dakota, and we bring you news and views from the heartland of America. I'm fighting the righties every day on behalf of the working people who've made the nation great. Tell your friends to listen. Give me a call toll-free, 1-877-934-6833. The Ed Schultz Show, noon to 3 on KRXA 540. Think for yourself.
Tom Hartman.
And over the last 3 days, the new conservative talking points that have been going out are blame it on Bill Clinton.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
The high gas prices, we got to shift the blame to the Democrats, say it's all because he didn't let them drill in Anwar. The real reason is because for almost 20 years now, the Republicans have prevented him from raising CAFE standards, the corporate average fuel efficiency standards. Average fuel efficiency of a car right now is back where it was in the 70s.
Tom Hartman, weekday mornings 10 to noon on KRXA 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. On a vote of 381-37, the House this evening demanded safer conditions for miners. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports.
Spurred to act by the rash of deadly coal mine accidents this year, the bill is the first major change in mine safety laws in almost three decades. It requires mining companies to provide a lot more emergency oxygen in the mines. Trap miners in several of the accidents ran out of air to breathe. The measure, which now goes to President Bush for his signature, also requires better equipment to communicate with trap miners and electronic devices to track where they are. It requires rescue teams be closer to the mines and increases penalties for safety violations. Todd Fuzz, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
What's the best car? Everyone has their own opinion, but according to J.D. Power's new rankings of initial quality, it's a German performance car, Porsche.
Porsche came out as the best nameplate overall with 91 problems per 100 vehicles. That means averaging a little under one problem per vehicle.
Toyota remains dominant with the number one spot in 11 vehicle categories. Jamie Power says automakers in general have improved quality by 8% over last year, but some still have work to do.
Land Rover had 204 problems per 100 vehicles. They were at the bottom of the list. Next up was Isuzu at 191, Volkswagen at 171, tied with Hummer.
CBS News correspondent David Martin reports the nation's top Marine made his first public comments about alleged atrocities committed by Marines in Iraq.
Marine Commandant Mike Hagee has seen the still-secret photos of women and children shot at close range. And today he spoke to reporters for the first time about allegations Marines he is responsible for training killed Iraqi civilians in cold blood.
I am gravely concerned about the serious allegations concerning actions of some Marines at Haditha and Hamdaniya.
Hagee says anyone who violated rules or regulations will be held accountable regardless of rank. He replied this way when asked if he'd considered resigning.
I serve at the pleasure of the president, and I have not submitted any resignation.
Late today at Andrews Air Force Base, a military plane carrying wounded GIs and CBS News correspondent Kimberly Dozier arrived from Landstuhl, Germany. Dozier was taken to the Naval Medical Center in Bethesda.